Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Now. Welcome to the award-winning Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
Well, thank you very much, and welcome to the broadcast. Jalene Jordan is off for the night. I feel like singing from, what was that? Oh, I can't think of the name of it. I've grown accustomed to your face. What the hell was that? My Fair Lady. That was it. That old film. I saw a great film. Well, good. Okay. Actually, pretty interesting film. Cadillac Records, about Chess Records, that rhythm and blues label from the 1950s through the 1960s that put so many blues and then rock and roll greats into the mainstream, actually. And I don't know. I guess I would say the plot had its moments of incoherence, but it was pretty good. I mean, you felt like you were in the 1950s, or it was filmed in the 1950s at least. So, I'd give a look at it. Where did I see it? Star John Harp. Well, this is Night Call. I'm Peter Werby. Our numbers are 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. If you'd like to email me, it's calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. The program also has a MySpace and also Facebook page as well. You can just, if you're into all that, you can just go there and just search for Night Call, and you'll get it all up. The show is podcast. It'll be up by noon Monday, so check that out. Well, it just gets scarier and scarier, doesn't it? What are we talking about? Well, only one thing, the economy. And it occurs to me, as I went off to this film last night, it depends on what has happened to you, what has happened to people in your family or to people you know. And it hasn't come real close to me. A couple of people I know already have lost jobs. Someone I know is a supervisor in an ad agency, and they had to fire 6 people, and that was very traumatic for them. Never thought that that would be what they would be doing. Never thought of that as part of their duties. But usually they were hiring people, but now, of course, things are changing. Here in the Motor City, by the way, this show broadcasts from WRIF. Our main listening area is the Detroit area, northern Ohio, southern Ontario. But because of the Internet, we're all over the nation. We're bad. We're nationwide, as ZZ Top sings, but also all around the world as well. So welcome to everyone. And our number, 313-298-WRIF, this in tonight. The White House and congressional negotiators are trying to remove the remaining differences over an emergency rescue for the struggling auto industry, a stark symbol of the deepening U.S. economic crisis. Prodded by shock unemployment figures, which showed the country shed more than 500,000 jobs in November alone, negotiators tried to forge an agreement in principle to provide the big three automakers with at least $15 billion in short-term loans. The Senate is going to be back in session tomorrow. Negotiators hope to have a package ready that can be quickly approved and sent to President Bush as one of the last measures he signs into law before Democrat Barack Obama succeeds him as president on January 20th. Are they going to be able to have the votes? I mean, that's one of those deals where they're going to have a filibuster. This guy, Senator Shelby from Alabama, who has all these non-union foreign car makers in his state, it looks like he'd like to see the big three go under. The fact that millions of people would lose their jobs as a result doesn't seem to mean much to him. The amounts under discussion are less than half the $34 billion that the automakers asked Congress for last week. Some economists say they believe they may need $75 billion to $125 billion to survive in the long term. Well, they just kind of just dealt it right off to all these financial concerns, didn't they? Nevertheless, lawmakers fear a recession will deepen if any of the three giants, GM, Ford, or Chrysler, collapses. Some from Bush's Republican Party don't want another rescue plan after a $700 billion Wall Street rescue package that triggered voter backlash in the November 4th congressional elections. Critics also say market forces, not state intervention, ought to determine the fate of the auto industry. Well, it's not like that's a big secret. If the market forces, the invisible hand of the market, as they like to say, if that's what determines what's going to happen, it's right down the crapper for all three of them. They have screwed up that badly, and you know, naturally it's going to be the average man and woman who is going to pay the price. Bailout backers say that since the government helped Wall Street, it must also help hundreds of thousands of blue-collar auto workers who have the support of Democrats. Pardon me. I'm reading, by the way, from a Yahoo News account. In addition to reorganizing and protecting taxpayer investment, possible conditions include creating a government car czar. I like that. To oversee the bailout and additional concessions by the United Auto Workers Union, which I want to talk about in just a little while. Now, get this. A UAW official, does it say who it is? No. UAW official, United Auto Workers Union official, speaking after a Detroit church service dedicated to prayers for the auto union, said on Sunday the union was open to moves by Chrysler to seek an alliance with a rival automaker as long as it saves jobs. They're praying to God to save the auto industry. You know, it's that, the Doors song where Jim Morrison starts off, "You cannot petition the Lord with prayer." This is getting to the level of absurdity that there's actually church services dedicated to prayers for the auto union. I don't know. Carl Levin, the senior senator from Michigan, says that there will be a deal within the next 24 hours. Increasingly, people want the CEO, Wagoner, to leave Rick Wagoner, the GM CEO, to get out of there. Let's see. One of the things, though, is, and this is the upside of the issue, is that people are starting to move on their own initiative. They're not, Barack Obama has this book, The Audacity of Hope, that one can hope for change, one can hope for better days. But hope is a pretty thin reed to grasp for one's future. Is you got to do more than that. You have to actively be engaged. Then you can hope that the results of your action provide, and I haven't read Obama's book, but I suspect that's in there. Because hope by itself, you could almost write a book calling it The Paucity of Hope, about how what a weak emotion is. You know, hope, you hope that it doesn't rain on your picnic. You get some tests from your doctor, and you hope that they come out good. Well, there's no way to intervene in things like that. And most of us feel pretty powerless that we wouldn't be able to intervene in the process of these elites that have ruined our present and that have the capacity to ruin our future as well. These are the guys that everybody thought were really the smart ones, the ones that, you know, that people say, oh, well, they earned all their money. In the meantime, who do you think is going to come out on the short end of this? Who's going to come out on the short end of this? Well, some people from an organization that does a lot of work in the labor movement, Labor Notes, they're sending just busloads of auto workers to Washington, D.C. tomorrow. In fact, you can go to autoworkercaravan.org. It's too late, really, to get on in the caravan, but it's autoworkercaravan.org. And they had a send-off for the buses today at 2 o'clock at the Metropolitan Center for High Technology downtown. And what they want is, let's see, auto workers see the crisis facing the big three as an opportunity to transform the industry and lay the foundations for a comprehensive plan. We could, quote, save 3 million auto industry jobs in the communities that depend on them. B would be to retool production for green energy technology and mass transit vehicles. Tie the bailout to the creation of a national single-payer health system. Why isn't anyone talking about this other than these people that are essentially on the outside of the elites controlling the situation? These are critics labor notes and this autoworkercaravan.org. Why isn't Ron Gettelfinger, the president of the UAW, say, look, part of the reason that the companies are not competitive is because that the company has to pay for the health care, not only for active workers, but for all of the retirees as well. It's billions and billions of dollars, billions of dollars, to provide adequate medical care for its members. That's what's been won since the 1930s. That's what people died for, literally. That's what people went on strike for. That's what people spent their lives in a noisy, dirty, unsafe factory for, to be assured under UAW contracts that they would get health care during their tenure as an auto worker, but also when they retired. And yet it would make so much sense, like every other industrialized country, for the government to pay for a single, they being the single payer, for a national universal health care program. And then all of a sudden, but you know what? Wait a minute. The country is deeply in debt. And now we're going to talk about these almost $1 trillion in loans when it's all packaged together, that the country is deeply in deficit because of the Bush policies that ruined the economy, or were the final capper on the ruination of the economy. I mean, he's Herbert Hoover, obviously. That there's no money for it. Well, there is money for it. It's money being wasted on these two wars that are absolutely unnecessary, the one in Iraq and the one in Afghanistan, the one that Barack Obama says, oh, we should ramp up the expenditures there. More on that later. So he would have to make public anti-war statements. But, of course, he's too timid to do that. He would sound radical. He would sound to the left. So he doesn't want to do that. So what is he going to do? He, Ron Gettelfinger, he's going to give back, make concessions, give these unwarranted givebacks to the companies that have ruined everything. What are they sacrificing? What did the workers on Wall Street, anybody say to the workers on Wall Street that are getting these hundreds of billions of dollars of loans, that everybody in their industry has to take cutbacks in their salaries? I'm not talking about this, you know, the big shots in the Wall Street firms. I'm talking about the average workers. Anybody talk about them giving concessions? I don't think so, did they? What's the final thing here? Fight for union benefits, workers' rights, and the assurance that workers don't take the fall for bad management decisions, says this document for the autoworkercaravan.org. To be sure. Let's see what else is in here. We can maybe go over this in a little while. The Free Press had a good series here. Seven myths about the Detroit automakers. He's saying essentially they're not as bad as everybody makes out to be. Well, here, this is the article from the New York Times. The United Auto Workers Union said Wednesday it would make major concessions in its contracts with the three auto companies to help them lobby Congress for $34 billion in federal aid. The surprising move, since nobody expected it, why the hell did they even do it, I would say, the surprising move by the UAW could be a critical factor in the automakers' bid not only to get government assistance, but also to become competitive with the cost structure of non-union plants operated by foreign automakers in the United States. See, this is blackmail. This is the stage at which, this has actually been going on a long time, either, you know, don't unionize or take wage concessions and benefit concessions, or we're moving our company out of the state, you know, to Mexico or Indonesia or something like that. And so all of the gains that people have made in terms of wages around industrial work, so industrial workers could live a middle-class life, suddenly are beginning to evaporate. And they're beginning to evaporate through a process of blackmail. And complicit in this now is the UAW and its president, Ron Gettelfinger. He said his members were willing to sacrifice job security provisions and financing for retiree health care to keep the two most troubled car companies, the big three, out of bankruptcy. Well, I'll be interested to see whether, in fact, they will. I mean, perhaps if you put it solely on that basis, do you want to have nothing? See, that's the blackmail part of it. Do you want to have absolutely nothing, or do you want to give up something? Well, any reasonable person would say, okay, I'll give up something. I'll give up, you know, some of my health care. I'll take a wage cut. Because Gettelfinger has already destroyed the wage structure of the union, this, you know, $25 an hour or something like that by allowing this two-tier wage to come in. So now people are going to be working at half that. They're going to be working at $14 an hour. So rather than auto workers, proud auto workers who live throughout our suburbs with homes and you know, if you work in auto, you sure deserve to have a decent middle-class wage, because that's not real. That's not desirable work. That's not work that one wants to do. Like I said, it's noisy, it's repetitive, it's I suppose it's not as unsafe as it was, but still. But Gettelfinger said, concessions? I used to cringe at the word, but now, why hide it? That's what we did. Ha ha. And they didn't even ask him. No one asked Ron Gettelfinger. It was, as it says, a surprising move by the UAW. What about fight back? Anybody ever hear that? The idea of fighting back against concessions? Hey, by the way, if you'd like to join this conversation, please give me a call. Peter Werby's my name. This is Night Call. It's 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. Let me know what you think. Should the UAW be making concessions? I'd like to hear both from union and non-union people about this all. And whether actually the UAW should have held its ground. Now, many of you say, man, they're making too much money. And this, again, is what I call the politics of resentment. The politics of resentment. You're making $11 an hour. So rather than aspiring to making the wage and benefit packages that unionized workers have fought for two or three generations, you hope they go to hell, too. You hope they wind up with $11 an hour and no benefits. Well, unions, besides fighting for the wages and the benefits for their members, also bid up the price of labor. In other words, our wages for all non-unionized people as well. Well, I must have said it, because here comes just tons of calls. 313-298-WRIF. And, hey, Roger, just put them all quickly on hold. Just say, hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on. Now, you know, Chrysler is owned by Cerberus. Cerberus is a capital management company. And it acquired 80% of Chrysler in last year with a $7.5 billion investment. So it's got a lot of other investments as well. And you do know, right, that Cerberus, the owner of Chrysler, that is, what is that, from mythology, right? Yeah, that's a multi-headed dog that guards the gates of hell. I mean, what an incredible name for it. Chrysler is offering, or rather asking for, almost $8.5 billion in loans from the U.S. And people are saying, well, wait a minute, why doesn't your company provide the funds? You've got it, right? You have it. Why don't you provide it? This is here, U.S. Representative Paul Kanjorski, who's a Democrat from Pennsylvania, joined in on the questioning in Congress of Nardelli. Why can't I ever think of his first name? Bob Nardelli. He's the CEO of Chrysler. And on Friday, he was being asked why the majority owner, why didn't they put in more money? So, Kanjorski said he engaged in a testy exchange with Nardelli, asking if the issue was that Cerberus did not believe the U.S. auto industry, quote, is survivable in its present form. And Nardelli said, sir, they've never conveyed that to me. This is Cerberus. Kanjorski, well, then why won't they give you any money? Nardelli says, I assume they have no access to additional funds. That's kind of, you know, kind of frightening, isn't it? Barack Obama says the economy is a big problem. Thank you, Barack. It's true indeed. He was talking with Tom Brokaw on Meet the Press, and I guess he was asked about it by Tom Brokaw. In the interview, Obama said things are going to get worse before they get better. And this was disturbing. In the wide-ranging appearance on Brokaw's Meet the Press, Obama once again gave strong indication that he's backing off his stance on two key campaign pledges, whether to repeal George W. Bush's tax cuts for the rich, which is one of the reasons that we're going to hell in a handbasket, and his call for bringing U.S. combat troops home from Iraq in 16 months. Hey, those are two of the reasons I voted for him. And he's already given it up? I mean, people, this is what I mean. We're hoping that that this money comes from the government to us, or many of us are, for saving the auto industry and saving jobs. We're hoping that Barack Obama does what's right and taxes the rich, eats the rich. They've eaten us for so long. They're the cause of what we're finding ourselves in now. In fact, is it time? Yeah, we should play it anyway. Eat the rich out of the palace into the ditch. Well, I don't even want that to happen. That's kind of mean, isn't it? That's Crocus, the Dutch metal band. But let's just get them taxed so they're paying for the damage that they've created and the amount of excess capital under their control that they do absolutely nothing with. That's just, in fact, is sluggish within the economy. But this is what I'm talking about, where hope. You hope that Barack Obama is going to tax the rich. You hope that a Barack Obama is going to bring combat troops home from Iraq. You hope that they're not going to expand the war in Afghanistan. I mean, we got to be involved. And if we're not involved, you can just keep hoping. And you can hope forever. And you can hope forever and forever and forever. Well, one of the things that Barack Obama says is that he's pledged to create a public works campaign, a construction program that is the largest since the inception of the interstate highway system in the 1950s. Jobs are evaporating, the recession deepening, and Obama began highlighting elements of the economic recovery program he's trying to fashion with congressional leaders, and he's talking now, let's see, that... He showcased his ambition to expand the definition of traditional work programs for the middle class, like infrastructure projects to repair roads and bridges, to include new era jobs in technology and so-called green jobs that reduce energy and global warming. It would cover a range of programs to expand, for instance, broadband internet access, to make government buildings more energy efficient, to improve information technology at hospitals and doctors' offices, and to upgrade computers in them. Let's see. There's no price tag on its plans, says the New York Times, but it could be a lot of money. The green jobs would include various categories, including ones dedicated to creating alternative fuels, windmills and solar panels, building efficient appliances, or installing fuel-efficient heating or cooling systems. Oh, yeah, they're talking this would cost another $400 to $700 billion. Well, this is, you know, remember during the campaign, they're saying he's just, you know, it's a socialist. Well, this is socialism. So is giving all this money to the banks and what have you. But so is building the interstate highway system a half a century ago. It's socializing the cost. It's government taking some from all of us to create whatever to for all of our benefit. The majority of where all this money goes now is mostly down a rat hole called the defense budget, which is actually a preparation for war budget, absolutely unnecessary, could easily be cut in half. And this is what nobody dares to call for, because they'd be saying, oh, you're going to weaken us, we're going to be subject to terrorism, Russia and China's going to run all over us and all that. Well, I think if you just all of a sudden... I'm not even sure, even if he just suddenly cut it and didn't do anything different, I'm not sure that our vulnerability would alter whatsoever. But there's been socialism in the sense of government expenditure, of socializing costs. Well, obviously we have to socialize the cost of military defense, whether you think this is needed or not, because it can't be done by private industry. So we're talking here about an economy that's going to be socialism in the sense of socializing costs. If you got a better idea, let me know. Because things are really in a dire situation. Well, there's a lot of you on the line. Let me get that over to you. 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. I'm Peter Werby. Jalene Jordan is off for the evening. Let's take our first call right here. It's Marty. Marty's in Carlton. Hey, Marty, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Yeah, Peter. I just heard you talking about Ghetto Finger.
Yeah.
Everybody wants us to be more and more like Toyota. We should be like our Asian counterparts.
Uh-huh.
All right. Then it said in a paper the other day that the UAW workers make $70 an hour with all of our benefits and everything compared to our Asian auto workers that make 40.
Yeah.
Okay, you want us to be more like Toyota? Why don't we start at the top and work our way down?
There you go.
The top 10 at Toyota Motor Company of North America, the top 10 CEOs, don't even make as much as one of our American CEOs.
Yeah, isn't it like Mullally making, didn't he make like $23 million at Ford?
Yeah, I would work for a dollar next year, too, if you gave me $28 million the year before.
That's right. That's right.
I'd be more than happy to work for a dollar.
And
I'm a third generation blue collar worker.
You know, I'm almost positive too that all of the Japanese auto companies in Japan are one, unionized, and two, that the country has a national health program, so the auto companies don't have to pay for any medical care for their workers.
I'm not sure on that, but I wouldn't doubt it any bit.
Yeah.
You know, does the press ever advertise what happens when you're a Toyota worker and you get injured on a job?
Don't know.
They get rid of you.
They don't
pay your benefits. They don't have you come in the plant and sit in an office and do paperwork. No, they just get rid of you. You get pregnant. Can you take a 52-week medical leave at Toyota? No, don't think so. See you later. Goodbye.
Well, I'm going to say that to you as well, but nicely, because I appreciate your input in it all. Thank you, Marty. Appreciate you calling 313-298-WRIF. Here's Bill in Clarkston. Hi, Bill. You're on WRIF.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Yeah, I'm a full in favor of the UAW making concessions, but I'm as well as top management making concessions at the same rate as the UAW workers should.
Well, that's not going to happen, of course. I mean, those guys are all set for life if they never drew another dime, right?
That's true.
Yeah.
But things I was reading about in the paper and some of the concessions they were talking about is this thing called the job bank where a laid-off worker comes in and makes 95% of their salary. And I can't think of any other industry out there that would afford such an opportunity for a laid-off worker, which and I don't even think they have those guys out working. But.
Well, they don't. And it used to be, I don't know, all of a sudden I lost that. I started hearing about job banks. I remember SubPay, which was supplementary unemployment benefits that you wound up making almost 90%. You know, in Japan, they used to have, and I suspect this is all gone, but they used to have something called the Iron Rice Bowl. The Iron Rice Bowl, when you worked for Japanese corporations. And it meant that within this society, that there was this strong commitment, a responsibility that everyone had to one another. And the corporations had a responsibility to workers to literally, you know, we say the world doesn't owe you a living. That's not in their culture. They say, in fact, the world in which they're part did owe employees a living. So if through either the vagaries of the economy or through, very frequently it's the missteps of the employers, that in fact they would keep paying them. So I don't have any real problem with the job banks. In fact, I would say that that everybody ought to get that. Why should somebody who works their butt off, who gives their all to a company, either white collar, blue collar, and suddenly through no fault of him or her, they lose their job. Suddenly they're making they're getting a wage cut of 80%.
Well, unfortunately, I can't say my experiences with most of the UAW workers have been positive ones because of the folks that I do know. I remember growing up and having several friends' parents that made their living through the auto industry and sitting listening to stories and actually visited some of them at the workplace about them sitting and laughing about these breaks that they're taking for 3-4 hours at a time, people leaving at lunch, going home, taping naps, and stuff like that. So I got kind of a skewed view.
Well, I'll tell you, first off, one always hears that. One wonders then, given all the stories about union janitors and ones like you've said you saw or you've heard, how they ever got any cars out of the plant. The other thing is, the Marxists always say, workers of the world unite, which isn't a bad idea, but I always say, workers of the world relax. The idea, for instance, in Japanese plants, that the workers are working something like 55 or 56 minutes an hour, so they literally become part of the machinery. You know, I'm all for taking it easy. And the idea that we have to live a life with our nose to the grindstone, with small breaks and what have you, is nothing that I'm a fan of. And the idea that somehow that workers are responsible for this, I just don't buy in the slightest. It's mostly profit taking. If things would have been run on a more sensible basis by the elites, none of this would have occurred. And if people are taking advantage of work rules or what have you, then who the hell's fault is that? It's the management's fault. All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate your call. See, this is the idea. It's never the elites. I'm always suspicious of people that see the whole problem as the guy and the gal who are on the line, who don't make any of the real big decisions at all. And listen, I know people in industry and I know people in offices. If they can scam a few minutes here, if they can scam a longer lunch hour, that's what workers do all the time. I mean, there's some people that are so love their work, but most routinized work, most work that doesn't really feed the soul, one is looking at how can you alleviate that a little. Well, you know, we have the worker, if you can call it actually someone in the position I'm going to describe, who works all the time. That's a slave, a slave. A slave has got an overseer over him all the time and can't take any rest breaks, can't scam out on any lunch, can't go to the John for 25 minutes or something like that. All right, I'm going to take a break. Jalene Jordan is off for the night. I'm Peter Werby. I'll be right back. Hey, you want to call us? 313-298-WRIF.
This is Night Call. On 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
Looking out there!
The pictures,
the podcast,
the blog,
the special features you just can't get
anywhere else. Get them online at WRIF.com.
I said, who just that?
Or check us out at MySpace.com/WRIF.
Guaranteed to be extreme.
Because we can always use more friends and we won't be naked.
Does anyone else smell Astroglide?
101
WRIF.
People are sexy and clever and they always say something funny right before a commercial break.
Everything that rocks.
Hi, this is Steve Black from 101 WRIF.
And I'm Jerry from Gleaners Community Food Bank.
How would you feel if you skipped lunch today and breakfast this morning, or maybe even dinner last night?
You sure wouldn't be at your best. And for lots of school kids in Metro Detroit, they can't be at their best because they're hungry.
That's where Gleaners comes in. Every day, Gleaners provides healthy lunches to school kids all over town, including your town.
And when you donate even $1, you'll provide 3 healthy lunches to a child, senior, or neighbor.
And that makes you a hunger hero.
Please take a minute right now and go to hungerhero.org. Make a secure online donation and watch a short video that shows you how Gleaners is helping feed our hungry neighbors.
Now more than ever, kids, seniors, and neighbors need your help. From all of us at 101 WRIF.
Comcast, VHICS.com, and Gleaners Community Food Bank. Thank you and happy holidays.
What's a WALU?
It's the perfect gift for the holidays.
But what is a WALU?
Your kid will love it.
So what is a WALU?
WALU is a life-size vinyl graphic that sticks to any surface. So, you know, you can show off your little leaguer just like the pros. It looks great in the bedroom, basement, garage, or anywhere you want to decorate. And it's not just for kids. Get a WALU of your motorcycle or your sports car or boat. For anything you want to show off, it's a WALU. So check it out now at www.wal-theletteru.com. That's wal-theletteru.com. WALU, the perfect gift.
What's a WALU?
It's the perfect gift for the holidays.
But what is a WALU?
Your kid will love it.
So what is a WALU?
All right, we've been over this before, but it does bear repeating. A WALU is a life-size vinyl graphic that sticks to any surface. Imagine the possibilities. Whatever you have that you want to show off, it's a WALU. Look for the WALU ad on WRIF.com.
This is Matt Demmer from Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury. I'm here to tell you that we at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury are still in the business of leasing, and we want to help you. Whether you're looking for the hot new MKS, the MKZ, or the hottest crossover vehicle, the MKX, Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury in Dearborn is your one-stop shop. At our dealership, we believe in honesty, reliability, and support for our customers just like you. You can check out our vehicle inventory on the site, and you can bet that if you don't see what you're looking for, we can surely find it for you. Experience the Demmer difference today. We're located on Michigan Avenue just east of Oakwood and Dearborn. Give us a call today, 313-274-8800. That's 313-274-8800. Or check us out on the web at Demmer.com. That's DEMMER.com.
Experience the Demmer difference. Right now at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury, lease a 2009 Lincoln MKS for $379 a month. Based on an AZ plan with Ford Lincoln Mercury lease renewal and $1,969 down plus tax. See dealer for details or check them out on the web at Demmer.com.
If your credit card debt has gotten out of control, if you're over your head at monthly payments, here's one powerful secret the credit card companies don't want you to know. You have the right to settle your credit card debt for a fraction of what you owe, allowing you to cut your debt up to half or more. That's bad news for credit card companies, but it's great news for you. We're Consumer Debt Advocate, and we'd like to offer you a free consultation that will help you start eliminating credit card debt. For your free consultation that will set you free, call 1-800-984-6953. Don't ruin your credit by declaring bankruptcy. Settle your debt and move on with your life. During your free consultation, you'll find out what the credit card companies don't want you to know. For your free consultation that will help you settle your credit card debt for a fraction of what you owe, call today. The number is 1-800-984-6953. 1-800-984-6953.
If the IRS tells you that you still owe back taxes, what can you do? Or if the state tax collector threatens you with wage garnishments, penalties, or seizures, what are your options? As an honest, hard-working American, you do have rights. If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, call American Tax Relief. They've helped thousands of people like you eliminate up to 85% of their delinquent taxes. Just call 800-493-8159. If you qualify, American Tax Relief can settle your tax debts for less than you owe, remove penalties and interest, and get the collector off your case. Don't let your tax problem get worse. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation and see how much money they can save you. Call 800-493-8159. If you qualify, you can save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Call right now. 800-493-8159. That's 800-493-8159.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. 313-298-WRIF. Jalene Jordan is off for the evening. Here's Nick in Imlay City who wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He says, I realize you were being somewhat facetious when you called for Bush to immediately step down in order to allow Barack Obama to take charge. Actually, I wasn't, and I agree with your sentiment, but that would be impossible. What do you think this is, a democracy, he says? That's the kind where people have the final say. Barack Obama has not been elected president yet. True, the election was over a month ago, but final authority rests with our anonymous overlords in the Electoral College. They will cast the official votes, because we voted for the electors, right, in November. On Monday, December 15th, hooray for democracy. Nick says, love the show, and thanks for making the podcast available every Monday, which it is at by noon. And you can either go to WRIF.com, or you can go to my website, Peter Werby, WERBE.com. This is kind of bad news. I don't know. Well, let me rephrase it. This is bad news. The rising cost of college, says the New York Times, even before the recession, threatens to put higher education out of the reach for most Americans, according to the biennial report from the National Center for Public Policy in Higher Education. That college tuition and fees have increased 439% since 1982. Now, I was talking earlier about some of these auto workers that are taking it upon themselves to go to Washington tomorrow, and they're on their way already as we speak on buses. And they're going to be demanding a lot more than the concessionary stance that the UAW has taken. But also, here is something that sparked the imagination of many people all around the country, that former workers at Republic Windows and Doors in Chicago say they will continue occupying their ex-workplace in shifts until Monday, tomorrow, when another meeting with company officials is planned. Now, what happened was that suddenly they were told, these workers in Chicago, that they were out of there. And not only that, but that they were not going to get paid. They weren't going to get their benefits. And this was all because of the Bank of America is not paying the company. Let's see. The bank, well, actually the Bank of America, its response is really something. Organizers of the action said the company can't pay employees because its creditor, Bank of America, won't let them. Crane's business, Chicago Business, reported that Republic's Windows monthly sales had fallen to $3 million from $4 million during the last month, and it said now they have no choice but to shut their doors. So this in an action reminiscent of the late 1930s, where the sit-down strikes began, and this is where the UAW began in the late 30s at the Chevrolet plant up in Flint, Michigan, here is they occupied the factory. They said, we're not leaving. We are occupying this facility. And this started a wave of sit-ins and sit-downs across the United States in the 30s and the early 40s. On Wednesday, December 10th at 12 noon, there is going to be a demonstration at the Bank of America in the Guardian Building, which is Congress at Griswold in downtown Detroit. And this is for two aspects of all of this. To show solidarity with the United Electrical Workers Union, the ones that are occupying the Chicago factory, but also to demand justice for Lorene Parker. Lorene Parker of Detroit fell behind on her mortgage with the Bank of America when she incurred large medical bills stemming from undergoing a heart and liver double transplant. She tried to contact Bank of America over a period of months to request the relief on her mortgage because of her medical hardship, and the bank is moving ahead with foreclosure procedures and has scheduled a sheriff's sale of Lorene Parker's house on December 11th. I mean, this is criminal. This is absolutely criminal. And these folks, let me see if I have a website for them, unfortunately, but they are trying to stop. They're trying to put in place a moratorium on foreclosures. Did anyone see, or how many of you saw, I guess I should say, the section of the daily papers here that listed all the homes in foreclosure in the Detroit area? So these things are all about maybe less than half an inch, these listings. And it looked like a Sunday paper. It was probably an inch thick or something like that. I mean, that's where we're at. We're at the 1930s, and we have not bottomed out. In the meantime, our pals at Walmart, now the world's largest company, whose sales are skyrocketing, they're doing just fine right now. They employ 1.6 million people and in their 4,000 stores. Walmart has closed its second union store in Quebec. Remember, I was saying, gee, they had organized another store. Walmart has shut its second unionized store in Gatineau, Quebec, in Canada. Walmart said it was closing the store because the wages ordered by the contract arbitrator made the Walmart Tire and Lube Express store unprofitable. I mean, can you imagine this multi-billion dollar company, eight guys organized, and they were making $8.50 an hour, and the contract gave them $11.50. What is it? Double? It's like $25,000 a year, barely. What have you? And the store was the first unionized Walmart store in Canada to have a contract imposed by an arbitrator. In 2005, Walmart shut a store in Quebec, firing 200 workers who had voted to join the United Food and Commercial Workers. Now, this again is blackmail. So if you're a Walmart worker and someone says to you, let's join a union, because we want benefits, we want better wages, because this company could afford to pay us $30 an hour, and it wouldn't affect their bottom line in the slightest. Do you know the Walton family are together, the heirs of Sam Walton, the owners of Walmart and Sam's Club? They're worth $90 billion. right? So if they paid all their workers $25 an hour, that you know how much they'd be worth? They'd probably be worth, $89 billion or something like that, right? Or maybe they are $88 billion. So this is pathological greed. So at a point of real intense economic difficulties for the people that make their fortune, they fire them all. These people, that's why I say eat the rich, because they have no sympathy whatsoever. I mean, they won't even pay to thatch our roofs, right? That may be if we were peasants, but they don't even want peasants. They just want disposable human beings, and they don't care about our lives. They don't care about our plans. They don't care about our kids. They don't care about our health. And you could say all they care about is the bottom line, which has been true for capitalism all the time. I mean, you know, it's a heartless system. The invisible hand of the market and all that crap. But there's truth in that. And that's why people have organized throughout its history to resist its worst aspects. And now, it's starting to all get rolled back. I mean, this is the 1920s in terms of unionization. Actually, it's like 1930. When after stock market collapse, moving into the spiraling down of the economy through the economy shedding hundreds of thousands of jobs. All right, let's continue on. 313-298-WRIF. Peter Werby with you. Here's Joe in Detroit. Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Doing good.
I wanted to try to cram as much of this as I can into a short period. One, I see history repeating itself right now. I was a kid in the 80s when they did the union busting and basically collapsed the steel industry in this country.
Right.
And now I see them doing it with the automotive workers. It's looking like the same thing to me. They're combining jobs and everything else and putting everything on supposedly a union worker that's getting paid too much. And a lot of things as far as people going for hour lunches or anything else, or taking advantage of time, punching in and then leaving or anything else. I was in it for 10 years, and none of that was being done when I was there, so that must have been before my time. Because now
a lot of it's rumor. A lot of it's urban legends.
Right. Since they've combined the jobs and everything else, there's no way for that to happen. I got three things that I think. One, I think that they do need to bail out the automotive industry, because if they don't, that's going to basically collapse the Midwest, worse than what the steel industry did to Pittsburgh and to the western part of the Midwest. The three things that I have in mind is some of the holidays they could cut back on. They could give some of those up. Instead of having New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, just take the day. Same thing with Christmas and a couple other ones, some of the holidays that aren't really major, anywhere else. There's way too much overhead in the office. A lot of times there's a line supervisor for each line. You don't need that many people. Mm-hmm. Half of those people spend a lot of their shift sitting in the office playing solitaire or whatever. You might see them twice a night. And then also there's way too much waste. A lot of your automotive parts, at the end of their part numbers, they have two letters. They usually start with AA in the beginning of the year. Well, towards the end of the year, they might be up to AW, where engineers have made that many revisions, that many changes to the parts. And instead of reworking the parts that they have, they do that in some cases, but a lot of the cases, they just scrap them.
Hmm.
They just throw them away. They could build whole cars with what they throw away.
Really? Wow.
So those three things right there is a lot of their downfall on their money, besides corporate greed and whatnot also.
Well, you know what, Joe? What they ought to do is they ought to get a lot of guys and women from the line that see that stuff firsthand, rather than the people that fly around in corporate jets and make $22 million a year. But they're always fearful of giving workers any more power. But thank you. I appreciate your call. Thanks a lot for calling 313-298-WRIF. Here is Gary in Onsted?
Onsted, Michigan.
Okay. Where's that?
That's near Michigan International Speedway.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I know where that is. Yeah.
Right over by MIS there.
I got it. Okay, go ahead. You're on the air.
I wanted to touch a couple bases. I hear a lot of finger-pointing going on here, and it's just like we really, really have to get back to the basics.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you think that it's, his fault, her fault, his fault. It's our fault. It's society's fault. We have a NAFTA agreement with supposedly, trading with other countries, and they're the ones that's doing all the trading with the United States.
Yeah.
Every time you go into a store and pick up any product, it's made in communist China.
Well, yeah.
How am I going to get a job? In communist China? That's where I'm going to go to get a job?
You know, Bank of America got just billions of dollars for a bailout, and they just invested $7 billion in China. They took that money, and they invested it in China.
Exactly. They're investing it in the collapse of the United States of America. And we as people, as the public, we tolerate that. We go into ACO. We go into Walmart, and everything we pick up is made in China when we should be setting it back down on the shelves.
Well,
and say, no, we do not need this stuff in our country anymore.
Well, I'll tell you, though, if we stopped buying stuff that was made in China, we wouldn't have much to buy.
I mean, so be it. If it's sitting on the shelves, they're not going to put it on the shelves anymore, are they?
Well, Where are you going to get shoes? There's no shoes made in the United States anymore, for instance. I mean, I'm not...
You're right. I'm not trying to say that it's going to be like an overnight thing, but we might have to start going without to make a point.
Well, you know what, Gary? What we need, I don't mean you and I, but I mean people that are the most directly affected by this, the people that are going to lose their jobs, the people that are going to have to take wage and benefit concessions. We've got to figure out a program. It's what I've said about earlier, about not just depending on hoping that things get better, or hoping that Congress will give the big three a bailout, or hoping that Barack Obama will do the right thing. We got to figure out an agenda the way they did in the 1930s. In the 1930s, they said, we've got to organize this country. We've got to unionize this country. I'm not saying that that's the whole thing to do, but we have to create, in a sense, a people's agenda, what we want for us, and it could, you know, we're pretty smart when we get together and when we start trying to figure out something, because, as I said, it's going to hit all of us. It's not going to hit the rich guys. 98%.
Absolutely right.
98% of them are going to just come out of this smelling like a rose.
Oh, my gosh, you are so, you hit the nail right on the head.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much, Gary. Appreciate your input into all of this. And what did I see? All right. Here, John is listening in Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina. This, according to The Nation magazine, which I would highly recommend. After the Bank of America, a $25 billion recipient of bailout czar Hank Paulson's Wall Street First largesse, cut off operating credit to the Republic Windows and Doors Company, executives of the firm announced Friday that they were shutting its factory in Chicago. That's what we were talking about. The Chicago firm, where the members of the United Electrical Workers, the UE, are occupying the factory as we speak. And what's starting to happen is the whole peace and social justice movement in Chicago are starting to support them, bringing them blankets, bringing them food. It's like the 1930s up in Flint, right there in that one little piece of real estate. And said, instead of going home to a dismal holiday season like hundreds of thousands of other working Americans who have fallen victim to the corporate reduction in force frenzy of recent weeks, which has seen suddenly secure banks pocket federal dollars rather than loosening up credit, the Republic workers occupied the factories where many of them had worked for decades. Can you imagine that? I mean, what possible allegiance should people have to a system that does this to them, right? I mean, what possible allegiance could they have? All right, let's see. We can get another call in, and then we will take a break, and we'll be right back with the second half of our show. Here's Dan in Warren. Dan, hi, it's Peter on WRIF.
Hey, welcome. Peter, how you doing?
Good.
I'm a 14-year auto worker.
Okay.
Employed with Ford.
Can you shut your radio all the way off?
Oh, I did.
Okay.
I'm on a cell phone.
Oh.
I'm currently in the job bank, which I don't know if any of the rumors are going around. It only pays 85% of what your pay was.
Hey,
right now.
What's the difference between that and the old subpay, the supplementary unemployment benefit?
Oh, with the subpay, you get 95.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah, right. So 85 is a pretty tough cut. Right now, I had to go out and get another job. It took me 4 months to find one at $9 an hour, just so I could make up what a 40-hour, you know, check would be and pay my bills. Right now, struggling to keep my house, and I see it on a couple different levels too. My old lady's a waitress, and believe me, with the gas prices the last couple of years and everything, tips went right down the hole. So I mean, you know, everybody thinks we're just riding the high hog, getting paid for nothing. And I mean, once you get settled in, you know, 14 years of paying on your house and everything else, when you lose a little bit, that's, you know.
No, I know. I mean, that people had an expectation of a middle class life, what people deserve for hard work and dedication to their job.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cut you a little short because I got to take a break and I got to get everything in before. Well, you know, actually, do me a favor. Hold on and I'll come back to you after the break. 313-298-WRIF. I'm Peter Werby. Jalene Jordan is off for the night. I'll be back to get your call.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
All right, $9 million.
To all of you who have stuck with me.
Divided by 900,000 citizens.
Through very difficult times.
$10 a head. Now, you're not getting much more out of these guys.
I'm sorry.
Good thing you can still text message us at the RIM. Get your request, concert info, and your unfair cellular advantage. Text keyword WRIF to 71913. And,
I'm sorry.
We'll never be embarrassed to hear from you.
I would never quit on you.
Log on to WRIF.com for more details. 101 WRIF.
My phone blown up.
Hey everybody, I'm Meltdown from 101 WRIF.
And I'm Jerry from Gleaners Community Food Bank.
Thousands of families in Southeast Michigan are hungry, and now people need your help more than ever.
Right now, we're hoping you'll be a hunger hero by helping Gleaners feed our hungry neighbors.
Your gift of even $1 provides 3 meals to a hungry child, senior, or neighbor. Think of it, just $7 will feed somebody for an entire week.
Every donation, big or small, makes you a hunger hero.
Listen, do me a favor. Before you forget, take a minute right now and go to hungerhero.org and make a secure online donation.
Or give us a call toll-free at 1-866-GLEANER.
Now more than ever, kids, seniors, and neighbors in your community are dependent on Gleaners to get through the tough times. From all of us at 101 WRIF,
Comcast, VHICS.com, and Gleaners Community Food Bank of Southeast Michigan, remember, go to hungerhero.org and make a secure online donation or call us at 1-866-GLEANER. Thank you and happy holidays.
Is your credit score holding you back? Are you paying more for everything just because you don't have perfect credit? Well, it's not your fault. Credit card companies are doing everything they can to keep you in debt and never let you escape. But I've got a system that can fix your credit score once and for all. And I'm going to send you a free tape showing you the power of my proven system today.
My credit score is now 758. My wife and I are shouting for joy right now.
Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. My system doesn't just fix your credit score, it will permanently rebuild your credit status so it can never come back to haunt you again. It works no matter how bad your credit is or how much debt you have.
Our credit score was in the low 600s and now we're at 780.
You can wipe the slate clean once and for all. Call right now and I'll rush you my free tape. For your free tape, call 1-800-337-1713. That's 1-800-337-1713. 1-800-337-1713.
If you have acne, here's a phone number you need to call. 1-800-335-4191. Right now, we're looking for the biggest skeptics out there to test out a skin-clearing breakthrough risk-free. People who are sick and tired of wasting money on acne products that just don't work. If that's you, give us a call. We're going to prove you can make your acne disappear and have clear skin by sending you a 60-day trial of Proactive Solution absolutely risk-free with our compliments. Find out how to get your risk-free 60-day trial by calling 1-800-335-4191. Our combination therapy system uses prescription-grade acne medicine and soothing spa-quality botanicals to create a powerful acne-fighting system. It's so effective, it transforms blemishes and bumps into clear, smooth skin and skeptics into believers. You can have beautiful, healthy-looking skin. Put us to the test and we'll prove it. Get your risk-free 60-day trial by calling now toll-free 1-800-335-4191. 1-800-335-4191.
What if I told you that you could put up a brand new building and save up to half the cost and up to half the time as similar conventional construction? It probably sounds too good to be true. Well, just by picking up the phone, I can prove it to you. If you need retail, office, or warehouse space, or if your church or school wants to expand and save money, you need General Steel. Call today, and we'll prove to you that your new building can go up in about half the time, and you'll save up to half the cost.
Dial 1-800-220-4155.
We'll help you customize your building. You choose the size. You can even add the look of brick, stucco, or stone to achieve the look you want.
If you still think this sounds too good to be true, then pick up the phone and call. The information is free when you call 1-800-220-4155. Call General Steel and find out how you can put up a brand new building in about half the time and save up to half the cost of similar conventional construction. Call now, 1-800-220-4155. 1-800-220-4155.
In national news, the New York Mint is releasing to the public a limited number of $100 Union Silver coins. At the end of this broadcast, we'll provide a toll-free number you can call to receive free information and a free DVD. Sketches of the coin were recently discovered deep in the vaults of the Smithsonian. The $100 Union was proposed by George T. Morgan, who also designed the Morgan Silver Dollar. It was to be the largest coin ever in size and denomination, and it weighs in at a hefty 1.5 ounces. In a startling announcement, the New York Mint plans to release a limited quantity of $100 Union silver coins to the public. The silver $100 Union proofs are available on a first-come, first-served basis by calling 1-800-957-5473. Please dial carefully. To receive the free collector's DVD containing the full story on this and many other coins, the number is 1-800-957-5473. That's 1-800-957-5473.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. Jalene Jordan is off for the evening. She'll be back tomorrow, next Sunday. Our number is here, 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. We're talking about the economy, about the bailout, about what responsibility union workers have in all of this. And we were talking with... Dan is in the job bank, and even at 85% of pay, finds it hard to make do. He's got a second job. Hey, Dan, you're on the air again now, but what do you think about people that say you're one of the guys that are part of the problem?
Well, you know, I don't even know what to say to that, really. I don't think I'm part of the problem.
Neither do I.
I think, you know, it has a lot to do with greed, upper management and whatnot, you know, the companies. And you see it all the time.
Yeah, I like I said earlier, I think that there's a responsibility for these corporations to provide for the people whose labor has made them wealthy. And if they've got to continue to pay people in down periods, you know, so be it.
Yeah.
Well,
like I said, you know, it's not full pay either. It's
What do you think about Gettelfinger? I mean, he's saying they didn't even ask him. He volunteered this. He says I'm getting rid of Dan's job bank.
Right. Well, that's, you know what that's going to do. That's going to put us on unemployment.
Sure.
And you can't get a second job on unemployment, so you're going to have a lot more foreclosures coming up.
Yeah.
Well, a whole lot more. I'll be losing mine for sure.
Well, I hope things improve, Dan. All right. Thank you for your call. Let's see. Here is Andy. Andy is listening. Andy's listening in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks for calling, Andy, from so far away. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. I was really enjoying the show tonight, and I really enjoyed your discussion of the nature of work and also what we workers have to do to protect ourselves from the really negative actions, the sometimes very unjust actions of our managers and of our bosses. Now, I work in a field that's not so alienating as it being on a factory floor. I work in the classroom. I'm a professor at a public institution of higher ed in the fine state of Tennessee. The economic downturn is hitting us hard, and it's hitting us fast. We have no state income tax, and the sales tax is the primary source of public revenue. Well, the recession is happening. People aren't shopping. Our projections for next year's budget are very, very bad. So those tuition increases that you described in your mention from the New York Times earlier, that's happening here. But what's also happening is that the institutions that I work for, and it's actually a large institution called the Tennessee Board of Regents, 6 universities, 13 community colleges, and a bunch of technology centers, we're going to have to cut our budget 20%.
Oh, boy.
Now, I don't know if – I'm not really a mathematician. I'm an English professor. But 20%, one-fifth of our total budget is going to be cut. So not only are the price of tuition going to go up for the students, the – wages possibly will go down for all of the faculty and staff, and we are already pretty much kind of in the bottom nationally in those regards. So when all this bad news kind of hit us and hit us hard from our Democratic governor, Phil Bredesen, the chancellor of the Tennessee Board of Regents issued a memorandum, and it was his new business model for higher ed in Tennessee, and it was one of the most atrocious, obnoxious documents that any of us in higher ed had ever read. It was filled with ideas of automation, a classroom without teachers, teachers becoming managers of undergraduates who would teach for free, and all kinds of other just ridiculous ideas. This memo created such an outrage on our campuses that a combined effort of activism, students and faculty working together, like nothing I've ever seen, because we're not really known for radical activism, not since the 60s anyway.
Sure.
And maybe we're feeling a revival of what Tennesseans did in the 60s. But we were able to get the Tennessee Board of Regents to, who were going to slip this thing by us. The memo was written the week before Thanksgiving, and they were going to approve it in spirit at a meeting the last week of the semester, just this past Thursday. And not only were they unable to approve the memo at the meeting as planned, the memo was taken completely off the table until there was more input from the campuses. Then they also had a thing that for faculty furloughs. Now, furloughs is a term that means leave without pay. It's a military term. They were going to give furloughs to all the campuses, and they were going to approve a change of the personnel policy of the entire Board of Regents to give furloughs. That was taken off of the table. And why was it taken off of the table? Because students and faculty from across the state raised their voices. They raised them loud. Lots of emails were sent. Lots of things were said. And we have the attention now of our politicians and of the people that run our institutions.
I noticed, too, that you guys didn't, from what you're telling me, you didn't offer concessions, rather the opposite. You said no givebacks.
Well, but unfortunately, at the campus level, the budget cuts are going to go through, and my low-level administrators, you know, those poor middle managers that we work for called the chairs and the deans of our departments, deans of our colleges, they were forced or they were required or they willingly participated in crunching the numbers for a worst-case scenario. So I've already seen some of the harm that this is going to do on paper to my campus, to my job, to my community. It's really, really bad. And none of us make very much money as it is. We have a huge army of adjunct professors who make under $15,000 a year.
Hmm.
We have a huge army of instructors who make around $25,000 to $30,000 a year. These are college professors. This is not some glorious Ivy League gig. We're kind of in the trenches of teaching. And it was only a temporary reprieve we got when we got the TBR to take that stuff off the table. They're going to have another meeting in January where stuff's going to happen. But the thing is that we've created a movement. A movement was born because of this memo, and it was largely the students at MTSU, the school in Murfreesboro, the largest school in Tennessee, larger than University of Tennessee, Knoxville, MTSU, where I'm a proud alumni, class of 99 with my master's degree. Those students have formed a large coalition from socialists on the left to libertarians on the right who all have agreed that they don't want their Middle Tennessee State University degree to be like a University of Phoenix diploma mill degree. And conveniently enough, to the advantage of their movement, the president of MTSU, Sidney McPhee, had already invited, as the keynote speaker to the commencement on Saturday, the 13th, the chancellor, Charles Manning of the TBR,
wow.
The big boss, is coming to MTSU, and we've organized a rally, a positive demonstration before and after the event. We're going to greet the graduates and their families as they come in with literature about saving higher ed in Tennessee. And we're sending the media and the chancellor the same letter tomorrow that's going to invite him to address us personally, the activists who started this movement immediately following the commencement of us.
Well,
you hit huge opportunities. huge opportunities because of activism. And the students have done it. They didn't even want the faculty to get involved because they knew we would be afraid of our jobs and afraid of being fired. The students wanted to go and stand, you know, stand on the really, at least right now, the proverbial or the virtual front lines of this movement. And I don't know if you guys know what the term going viral means on the internet, but on Wednesday afternoon, a Facebook group was formed called Fight the TBR Business Model. College should not be run like a business. And it's got thousands, like over like about 1,400 members in like 3 days.
Oh, that's incredible.
It's still going on. And comrades from around the country, academic workers and students from around the country, they can support this struggle online. They could Google the Tennessee Board of Regents. We've got an article in the Chronicle that gave Chancellor Manning a fake award, Turkey at the Top, by an academic labor activist from out west called Mark Busquet, who has a blog on the Chronicle website. So anyway, there's a lot going on, and I just send my greetings to all the academic workers up there in Michigan, because I'm sure it's bad stuff.
Yeah, the same thing is happening up here, and I think, Andy, you hit the two words of all the description, which was very heartening, was organize and movement. So I want to thank you. Thanks for that report from Tennessee.
Good night.
All right, good night, and thank you. And that's it. You just look out. Look through our history, look through the history of the world, and that's what it's all about. Hey, at 1 a.m., I'm going to be interviewing Daniel J. Weiss. He's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress about the proposed auto bailout. And also an incredible story from Wafa Bilal. He's an Iraqi-American, and he describes his life under Saddam and the death of his brother during the U.S. invasion and occupation, and then of this over-the-top art project that he put together. The book is called Shoot an Iraqi. And so that's at 1 a.m. Let's see. We take some more calls from around here. 313-298-WRIF. I'm Peter Werby. Here's Tom in Port Huron. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
How you doing, Peter?
Doing good.
I just want to have some comments about the economy.
Yeah, sure.
The big three think they need the bailout. But the whole economy of the state is in such bad spot or situation that people can't afford to buy cars anymore. You know, they can't afford a $25,000 to $30,000 vehicle, and these people don't seem to realize that. And that's why they're not selling the vehicles, because people can't afford to buy them because there's no jobs.
There is a vicious circle going on here. You're right.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And these people want to get bailed out. I mean, they can't bail me out. I mean, I've been a carpenter for over 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in everything. And it's a vicious cycle, like you say. And it's a mess.
You know, there's this car in India. I can't remember what it was. Is it a Tata, or is that just the guy that owns it? T-A-T-A. They're making a car for $4,000.
Yeah.
A new one.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're making, GM says they're going to make this Volt, this electric car, electric hybrid, or they can get 100 miles a gallon from the gasoline that's in it. It's going to sell for $40,000.
Well, it's crazy.
That's too much.
All these higher-ups, the guys that make billions of dollars a year, they made a special trip to drive to Washington. This is taking their corporate jets, but come on, man. You know, these guys, the one guy says he wants to make, he'll take a dollar salary, but that reflects on everyone.
Yeah, well, I'm sure the banking guys all flew on their own jet, their own private jets as well. In fact, I think it's in this interview that I did that's going to come up at 1 a.m. where it says that it's a matter of being last in line. You know, I mean, so, everybody's asking, of course, for billions and billions in bailouts. So these CEOs, which, I mean, it was a terrible PR decision. They should have, I mean, just think what the opposite of that. They would have driven in the first place. If the CEOs of the big three would have driven to Washington in hybrids in the first place, that would have been a good, image. But it's like they're on planet Mars or something like that. They just don't get it. And some of them ought to exit real quickly. All right, thank you very much, Tom. Appreciate your call. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. Here's Ron in Bridgewater. Hi, Ron. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I've been listening to you on the way home from work. I hear all this business about the high cost of labor and the high wages and benefits. First of all, I'm going to tell you, I'm an auto worker. I'm a skilled tradesman. I have close to 40 years working in as a skilled tradesman, and I just can't apologize for what I make. You know, I figure I'm worth what I get. I'm sure that I contribute more to this society than Hannah Montana or all the Detroit Lions.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, one could ask, if the wages were, quote, too high, why did the General Motors and the Ford and the Chrysler management agree to this in the first place? They agreed to them because it was consistent with their profitability. And what was screwed up at the top. I mean, it wasn't anything having to do with the wages that sunk the companies, but rather it was the management.
Well, they did agree to them like that because, if you actually look at the cost of labor in an automobile, it's about 10%. It really is not all that high.
It's that low? Are you sure, Ron?
I can't say that for absolutely sure, but from what I've read, yeah.
Go ahead.
The cost of labor really is pretty low, percentage-wise.
All right. If anybody if people disagree, call in or they can email it, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I think it is higher, but go on. Let's not get hung up on that.
Anyway, if we talk about some of the benefits, first of all, like the sub fund.
Yeah.
People think we get 95% of our pay when we get laid off. Well, no, they figure 95% of what your take home pay is. So all of a sudden it's a whole lot less. And then they deduct a little bit here and a little bit there for expenses they figure you don't incur by going to work. And if you really add it all up, it works out to more like 60 or 65% of your pay.
Well, Ron, what it is, and I don't know if you heard that part of it earlier, there's this great sense of resentment. People would say, well, wait a minute, I'm getting $300 a week on unemployment. What there should be is the sub and the sub pay and the job bank ought to be a model for everyone in society. In fact, if the companies can't guarantee it, the government should. I mean, the government bails out these people that have made awful decisions in the financial markets or in the industrial area, and yet when a worker who has made no bad decision whatsoever, he or she has gone to work every day, done what they were told to do, accomplished what they were supposed to do, and then all of a sudden, boom, you're out of here, and then they're supposed to live on a third of what their pay. I mean, why doesn't every single worker have the right to be bailed out when the stuff occurs that's none of their doing?
Oh, certainly so. The people that employ them and then lay them off like that, too, as soon as things get better again, they want them back again. So, they want people to be on a yo-yo string.
Well, they're also, remember, the UAW agreed, why in the world they ever did, to new hires coming in at $14 an hour. So, you're going to, pretty soon, you're going to be sitting next to guys. I don't know if that's in the skilled trades, but certainly on the assembly line. I got to move on. Thank you, Ron. Appreciate it. I wanted to get a couple of these things in that are a little off subject. I haven't had enough bad news tonight. Well, let me add this one. The United States can expect a terrorist attack using nuclear or biological weapons within the next 5 years, according to a U.S. study that was leaked today, according to the Herald, which is from the United Kingdom. The report by a bipartisan commission, which will be published officially tomorrow, said the margin of safety in America was shrinking, not growing, and urged the U.S. to move with a sense of urgency, saying that time is not our ally. It also said the potential nexus of terrorism, nuclear and biological weapons, was especially acute in, not Iraq, not Afghanistan, our ally, Pakistan, right? Well, we should not be at war in Afghanistan. Can anyone, you keep, I hear more and more about it. We have the, you know, the real war against terrorism is in Afghanistan. That's the good war. There was a total mistake to go to war in Iraq. You know, the Taliban were some awful, awful people, these repressive right-wing fundamentalists, much like our, and have with the same, are they the same religionists as the people in Saudi Arabia? If not, their method of governing, totalitarian religious repression is identical. And those are our buddies, you know, in Saudi Arabia. They whip people, they cut off their arms, they don't let women drive or show their faces in public, on and on. You know, it's like they're like the Taliban, except they give us the oil. And the Taliban, I think I was even saying this last week, they allowed, and allowing is, one can even wonder what that all meant, allowed Osama bin Laden to hang out in the mountains. You know, it's not like they had an office in downtown Kabul or something like that. In fact, the Taliban, as I've said so many times, was George Bush gave the Taliban $42 million in April of 2001. He hosted them when he was governor of Texas in the 1990s, trying to doing one of these oil deals with some of his buddies in the oil industry. So the trying to fight to destroy the Taliban is a fool's errand, and it's what creates us as targets for terrorism. We've got to disengage with the Middle East militarily and trying to dominate that region. We got to get out of the Middle East. We got to get out of Asia. The United States should not have a presence all over the world. We shouldn't have military commands for the Middle East, military commands for South America, military commands for Asia. That's where all our money's going. And there, not only is there not a need for it, it winds up kicking us in the butt in the end. And when you have threats here, we are hated. We, all of us, I mean, they, you know, the guys at the top have made all these decisions. But we're the ones, like on 2001. I mean, we're the ones, the ordinary people, that suffered the real casualties. And if we continue on this trajectory, there's going to be more of it, as this report said. But, let's see, an atheist rights group is suing the Kentucky Office of Homeland Security because state law requires the agency to stress, quote, dependence on Almighty God as being vital to the security of the Commonwealth of Kentucky. I mean, what are these people on about? The American Atheists and 10 non-religious Kentuckians are plaintiffs in the lawsuit. Edwin Kagan, a Kentucky lawyer and the national legal director of American Atheists, says he was appalled to read in the Lexington Herald Leader last week that state law establishes praising God and installing a plaque in God's honor as the first duty of the Homeland Security Office. Well, oh man, I mean, is there any continuity between the religious fundamentalism of these people? In the suit, they said Homeland Security should focus on public safety threats rather than promoting religion. It said they called the September 11, 2001 terrorist attack by Muslim fundamentalists and refers to those attacks as, quote, a faith-based initiative. The plaintiffs ask for the Homeland Security law to be stripped of its references to God because it's clearly unconstitutional. They also asked for monetary damages, claiming to have suffered sleeping disorders and mental pain and anguish. According to the suit, plaintiffs also suffer anxiety from the belief that the existence of these unconstitutional laws suggests that their very safety as residents of Kentucky may be in the hands of fanatics, traitors, or fools. I guess anybody that put that into a law about Homeland Security, I don't know about traitor, would be a fanatic or a fool or both. Peter Werbe here with you, 313-298-WRIF. Let's go back to our subject that we've been talking about, the economy and the bailout. Here's Phil in Belleville. Hi, Phil. It's Peter Werbe on WRIF. Hey, Phil.
Traitors or fools.
All right, here's what I'm going to do. Phil, I'm going to put you on hold, and Roger, thank you in advance for doing all our phone work. Could you tell Phil to turn off his radio? All right, here's Jim in Detroit. Jim, hi, you're on the air.
How you doing, Peter?
Doing good.
It was real refreshing to hear you tonight. It's the first time I've listened to somebody
talk on the radio since I used to listen to Sheila Rushlow on ABX in the 70s.
Uh-oh.
So that's quite an honor for you.
Well, thank you.
I think you're right on track with everything. I work for the Big Three. I've been at Ford Motor 21 years. I just had to transfer to another plant and give up all my seniority, end up on afternoon shift, can't eat dinner at home with my kids, can't go to my kids' football or wrestling, just to have a job. And we've taken concessions in the last contract, as you know, with the VEBA that's not going to fabricate the health care for the retirees. I don't know what everybody's complaining about, because I don't see congressmen and senators taking a pay cut. And we certainly can't ask people on Medicare and Social Security to take a pay cut. There's people in this country, elderly, they can't afford medicine and take medicine, supposed to take it every day, and they're taking it every 4 days. Then they end up in the hospital running up a $20,000 tab that's never going to get paid. And it's just sad that we spend all this money on Citicorp and all these big corporations and wars that we don't need to be in.
Yeah, hey, Jim, you know, you mentioned VEBA, and I always forget. What does that stand for again?
Voluntary. It's the company was supposed to kick in X billion of dollars, and then the union was supposed to manage the health care
for
retirees.
And when it came down, critics, including myself, said, Ron Gettelfinger, president of the UAW, what the hell are you doing? This is going to wind up terrible for the workers and for retirees. And sure enough, Gettelfinger has said they would be willing to allow General Motors to not contribute what it owes to the VEBA fund, to the medical fund.
This is the same Gettelfinger of the United Auto Workers, where it was founded on equal pay for equal work, where a woman doing a man's job was supposed to be paid the same money, and then they turned around and they let them hire people at $14 an hour, which is totally against the union of equal pay for equal work. And I can't believe that ever flew.
I know. It's just amazing. All right, Jim, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Full disclosure, I always have to say this. Ron Gettelfinger fired me. But I'm not, my criticisms would be the same. Jalene and I, as many of you know, had a nationally syndicated show on a network owned by the United Auto Workers. We worked there from 2000 to 2003. And in fact, I don't even disagree with his decision to having fired us. It's a long story, but I'm not nursing any grudges. The problem was, man, I'd be saying these, I'd probably be out of there anyways, because I'd be saying these same things if we were still working, for them, which I probably would only be working for them for a very, very short amount of time. Let's see, here's Lars in Madison Heights. Hi, Lars, it's Peter, and, you are on WRIF. Welcome.
Hi, Peter. I just came to call you. I just got out of the Neil Young concert.
Oh.
I was tabling with, Veterans for Peace, as I was the representative from Iraq Veterans Against the War, and we had three Vietnam veterans, members of Veterans for Peace, and we received approximately $150 in tips alone.
Wow.
From patrons of the Neil Young concert.
Did he sing any anti-war songs?
He did a cover of, I'm trying to think of the name of the Beatles song, but like I Heard the News Today.
Oh, yeah. Right.
I was in the corridor for most of the time, like in the hallway for most of the time, so I couldn't really hear what songs he was singing. I was hoping he'd do Let's Impeach the President, but he didn't.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a little late in the game for that, although they ought to still give it a try. Just too loud, Lars. We're going to have to do it another time. Thank you. And Lars is a member of the Iraq Veterans Against the War, IVAW.org, and they were tabling. I don't know if you caught all that. They had tables with literature along with Veterans for Peace and what have you. It's large. I don't think it's not large compared to like a mainstream veteran organization, but it's pretty big. All right, let's see. I want to get this. Here is is it Corlin? Is that your name? From Ann Arbor? Hello, hello. Why aren't I hearing this? I don't hear a thing. Corlin, are you there? Huh. Did I do something wrong? All right, I'm going to put him back, or her, or here. I don't even know. Let's see. Okay, let's go back to Phil in Belleville. Phil, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for putting me on tonight, man. I appreciate it.
Glad to do it.
I just want to say that I honestly believe things are all based on these gas prices. I mean, if these gas prices weren't in this situation, I don't think the Big Three would be in this situation.
Oh, you mean because they were so high?
Yeah, I mean, it's just ridiculous that, you know, it could be $4 a gallon 2 months ago, and now all of a sudden we're down to $1.59 a gallon. I mean, why If they would have done this 3-4 years ago, I don't think we'd be in this predicament today.
Yeah, I think the oil companies ought to bail the auto companies out. Think about how much those big gas guzzlers contributed to the oil company profits.
It's amazing. I mean, you know, they got record profits, and all of a sudden, you know, now the big three are in a struggle, and here they go to Congress asking for a bailout, which is not a bailout. It's pretty much a loan to them.
Right.
And here they bail out the AIG and all these other people with no questions asked, and here they're giving the big three a hard time. I think it's ridiculous.
You know, I was talking earlier about Walmart. You know, the Walmart family, they could write a check. Imagine this, the family, the five or six of them, could write a check for $34 billion, and they would still, I can't do the math, let me see, they'd have $56 billion left.
Yeah, it's sickening. I just don't understand. It just doesn't make sense to me. I just don't know where the good ethics in, you know, the good ethics in America have come from. You know, it just.
Well, that's what a union worth its definition ought to be doing, rather than the UAW saying, "Oh, we'll give up this and we'll give up that, and you're not going to have to make payments." They should be talking about, "Hey, let's take all of the Walton family's money, which they can't spend because they got so much, except for $10 billion. I mean, that's not." Yeah, well, it sounds like a commie plot. Well, taking $80 billion for somebody who's just got it parked in wherever, and a family is doing everything they can to suppress the wages of the workers at their places, I mean, they don't even deserve. I mean, it's not even a matter of deserve it. I mean, they're not using it. I mean, you ought to. What are they doing with that other $80 billion when you know, people in this, when in our state and in our country are suffering such deprivation? All right, thank you very much. I'll be right back with our final segment. Peter Werby here with you. Jalene Jordan off for the night. 313-298-WRIF.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
All right, $9 million.
All of you who have stuck with me,
divided by 900,000 citizens
through very difficult times.
$10 a head. Now you're not getting much more out of these guys.
I'm sorry.
Good thing you can still text message us at the RIF. Get your request, concert info, and your unfair cellular advantage. Text keyword WRIF to 71913. And
I'm sorry.
We'll never be embarrassed to hear from you.
I would never quit on you.
Log on to WRIF.com for more detail. 101 WRIF.
My phone blowing up.
What exactly is telemetrics and what does it mean to me?
How does changing light bulbs save me money?
Where are the best places to find organically grown foods?
When will Michigan be seeing an increase in green building?
What are some easy steps my family can take to be more green?
How can my coworkers and I start a recycling program at work?
Got lots of questions on Michigan's green future? Get lots of answers at movingmichiganforward.com. You can also join the discussion, offer your ideas, suggestions, and advice on how we can all work together to live greener in Michigan. MovingMichiganForward.com, in partnership with Next Energy, is brought to you in part by IBEW Local 58 and NECA Signatory Employers, The Good Food Company, and Charter One.
Got lots of questions on Michigan's green future? Get lots of answers at MovingMichiganForward.com.
MovingMichiganForward.com. Learn, share, grow, make your future green at MovingMichiganForward.com.
If your credit card debt has gotten out of control, if you're over your head at monthly payments, here's one powerful secret the credit card companies don't want you to know. You have the right to settle your credit card debt for a fraction of what you owe, allowing you to cut your debt up to half or more. That's bad news for credit card companies, but it's great news for you. We're Consumer Debt Advocate, and we'd like to offer you a free consultation that will help you start eliminating credit card debt. For your free consultation that will set you free, call 1-800-984-6953. Don't ruin your credit by declaring bankruptcy. Settle your debt and move on with your life. During your free consultation, you'll find out what the credit card companies don't want you to know. For your free consultation that will help you settle your credit card debt for a fraction of what you owe, call today. The number is 1-800-984-6953. 1-800-984-6953.
How would you like to lose weight for free? Hi, I'm Steve Bostic for Right Size Smoothies.
And I'm Scott Johnson. For a few months now, we've offered an incredible deal to the public. Use Right Size Free for 2 full weeks and see how much weight you can lose before you pay for them.
But some of you haven't called, so we're offering one last chance to take advantage of this popular offer. These people called.
I lost weight within a couple days. Now I'm down 120 pounds.
A free trial sounded like a no-brainer, so I called. Within the first week, I'd lost a lot of weight.
I knew within a few days I finally found the answer. I've lost 44 pounds.
Right Size Smoothies contain an appetite manager that knocks out hunger cold. You'll see results early, so you'll know you can do it.
How much weight can you lose in 2 weeks? Try Right Size Free and find out. You could be our next testimonial.
For your free 2-week trial, call 1-800-644-1381. 1-800-644-1381. 1-800-644-1381.
Do you know the fastest way to learn a new language?
Memorization?
We always did translation.
Is it drills?
The world's fastest, easiest way to learn a new language is Rosetta Stone software. It doesn't waste your time with tedious translation, useless memorization, or boring drills. Instead, it teaches you a new language the same way you learned your first language. And right now, you can experience it for yourself because Rosetta Stone is offering a free demo CD-ROM. Check out the easiest, fastest way to learn the language of your choice. For the free CD-ROM, call 1-800-441-6151. Discover what U.S. diplomats, NASA, and over 10,000 schools are already know that this is the world's fastest, easiest way to learn a language, guaranteed. Choose from 31 languages and request your free CD-ROM today. You'll be amazed at what you learn. Just call 1-800-441-6151. Request your free CD-ROM from Rosetta Stone by calling 1-800-441-6151. That's 1-800-441-6151.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. Jolene Jordan is off for this Sunday. She'll be back next week. We're at 313-298-WRIF, talking about the economy, talking about the bailout, talking about the union. I was talking earlier about the cost of these wars and how unnecessary they are. Certainly almost everyone agrees the Iraq war is unnecessary. Still, it's cost us hundreds of billions of dollars and will wind up costing us a couple trillion, thanks to George W. Bush. He said, well, I made a little bit of a mistake on the intelligence, on your own. But here is more information in Peshawar, Pakistan. Militants torched 160 vehicles, including dozens of Humvees destined for U.S. and allied forces fighting in Afghanistan, in the boldest attack so far on the critical military supply line through Pakistan. The American military said Sunday's raid on two transport terminals near the beleaguered Pakistani city of Peshawar would have minimal impact on the anti-Taliban operations, and it's still unclear why the Taliban are the enemy. The Taliban never did anything towards the United States. I mean, they had no idea that that anyone has ever shown that they knew that Al-Qaeda was going to do what they did in September 11, 2001. But this is all about controlling directly Afghanistan with a client government that will allow the exploitation of resources there. So this is that's what it's all about. See, there was an attack on it. They set fire to 106 vehicles, including 70 Humvees. Humvees are thought to cost about $100,000 each, though the price varies depending on armor and other equipment, meaning Sunday's losses may exceed $10 million. The Associated Press reporter said he saw six rows of Humvees and military trucks packed close together, some on flatbed trailers, all of them gutted and twisted by flames. And U.S. spokeswoman Lieutenant Colonel Rumi Nielsen-Green said, it's militarily insignificant. You can't imagine the volume of supplies that come through there and everywhere else in other ways. So, ta-ta, you know. It's just down a rat hole, folks. It's not, it is going to make our security worse, absolutely worse. All right, let's continue onward. 313-298-WRIF. Bob is on the road. Thanks for joining us here on the air. Bob, are you? Oh, I see. Sorry, Bob. I got it's one of these things where I got to press the button. There you are, Bob. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry. Go ahead.
My biggest complaint, I guess, I'm a UAW worker. I've been with UAW for like 6 years.
is the slant that the media, mainly the newspapers, always put on how much we make. You know, you're reading the newspapers, and the newspapers say UAW workers, and they always say, including benefits, make upwards of $70 an hour or more.
Right.
You know, but they don't just come out and say that they'll make $27, $28. You know, they'll say Honda, Toyota make $24 or $26 an hour, and they won't say the actual hourly rate for UAW. They'll turn right around and say $70 or $78 an hour. You know, and that just adds to the stigma that all the people have been saying. You know, the overpaid, underworked UAW workers. There's probably people that actually think UAW workers make $70 an hour.
I know, and that was put forth at first by the Wall Street Journal in this far-right-wing paper in Pittsburgh, and it's just been picked up on. The idea that an auto worker could make a middle-class living began in the late 1930s and was strengthened, by the 1950s. And there's been an assault on that ever since because, the right wing, led by the Republicans, want to decrease wages rather than increase it. I mean, it's amazing that they'll, you know, support the ultra wealthy, but when it comes to the average person in this country, they think nothing of eroding the wage and benefit standards that we should all have as a matter of right.
And
why isn't everyone making what UAW workers make? That's what it should be about.
And what I think a lot of people also don't realize is I'm skilled trades, and a lot of skilled trades like electricians, plumbers, pipe fitters, UAW electricians, plumbers, pipe fitters make pretty much the same as what electrician and plumber on the outside makes. I've been a powerhouse operator, refrigeration, AC operator. If I were to go to work for DTE or, you know, an outside company doing HVAC, something like that, I'd make about the same money there that I'm making, you know, at the UAW. So it's not like we're making extreme amounts more than what we would be at a different company. In some cases, I might actually be better off if I went someplace else, and I sure would be as far as security the way right now everything is right now.
Well, you know what, Bob, that I can never understand? You'll get these people that will defend the obscene wealth that accrues to the employers and the stockholders and what have you. And if you talk about, well, we should raise taxes on the ultra wealthy, well, it's their money. And yet people that are actually creating that wealth at ground zero in the plants or in the factory, wherever any of us work, there's always this resentment that people are making a decent wage. And we've had to fight for this for generations. I mean, if it was left to the tender mercies of the employers, we'd still be working 12-hour days, no days off, no benefits, no health care, kids that work in the factories. I know they always talk about the union movement that brought you the weekend. All right, Bob, thank you very much. Thanks for having joined us. Let's see, here is Larry way out in Vancouver, Canada, British Columbia. Thanks for making our show international, Larry.
Merry Christmas, Peter.
Well, thank you very much.
I wanted to bring up 2 points with you. The first one is you were talking with a caller about shoes and buying shoes in in a store.
Uh-huh.
I actually found out that there is one shoes that you can buy that are made in America.
Really?
This is a New Balance. And apparently they have 3 factories in Maine, and they have 2 factories in Massachusetts. And I believe their headquarters is in Boston. But they still make a percentage of their shoes and apparel made in America.
That's amazing, because I'd always thought that there was absolutely no shoe manufacturers left. You know, Maine used to be a big center of shoe manufacture, and they'd all, there was a one I used to get, Rockport. I used to even go to Rockport, Maine, where they would have a factory outlet. You could great shoes there for a good price, and now you look at them, made in China. They're the same outlet, but it's just not made in Rockport, Maine anymore.
So if you want to buy shoes that are made in America, New Balance is the one.
Okay, well,
and,
good.
And I had a second point.
Sure.
I just came across recently that the movie Missing, which was made in 1982, they have a revised edition with like the actual people involved and things like this and updates on what happened.
What was the, I don't know what the theme of it is.
Well, the movie Missing was about where I believe Jack Lemmon and Sissy Spacek were in the movie, and they alleged that the U.S. government helped with the coup in Chile.
Right.
Also, that two Americans, or well, not even two, but many were killed by the Chilean junta, and that the U.S. government allowed it. And they have extra information in the new video that's being brought out, the DVD. And I found that right at the moment there's a Chilean judge in the court that's looking into the death of Charles Harmon, who was the main character in the movie.
I do remember it now. I never saw it, but I'll tell you, Larry, I can't even watch films like that. I get so angry and so sad, and to know that the United States government, and you know the date of the Chilean coup, don't you?
September 11th.
September 11th, 1973, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. And this was engineered by Henry Kissinger and the Nixon White House, and this is one of the reasons why Henry Kissinger could never go to Chile. He'd be arrested.
I have a question.
Sure.
Because I heard that President-elect Obama is considering indicting people in the Bush administration, right? But do you know if he's going to recognize the International Criminal Court?
I don't know, and I doubt whether he would be filing any charges against the Bush administration. I mean, people got so exercised about Obama being a socialist and a far leftist. The guy's a center-rightist, and unless we push him real hard, we the people, in some mass movement, look, he put in his national security staff, there's not a single person on that staff, and, you know, from Hillary Clinton on down, that opposed the Iraq war from the beginning. Yeah. So
the question is, what changed, I guess?
Yeah, I'm waiting to see. I mean, he's got a big job ahead of him, just saving the economy. So we will see. Well, as I said, Larry, thanks for making our show international.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate it. And thanks for the information about New Balance. I didn't know that. So there are shoes made in the United States still. Interesting. Let's see. Here is Danny in Rochester Hills. Hi, Danny. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. How you doing tonight?
Doing good.
I really appreciate you taking my call. You know, I did a lot of work for Tier 1 automotive suppliers over, say, the last 10, 12 years. And, you know, I worked on the lines, et cetera, like that, every kind of job you can imagine in a non-union facility. And now the last 5 years I've been seeing kind of from the other side of the fence. I've been in a technical service and sales job as a supplier to the auto industry. And I have to tell you, I think a lot of what's going on in our country as a whole with the economy, et cetera, is really just a culmination, in my opinion, of a lot of long-standing, long-running greed that's been going on. And I think I see it every day, and I think there's clearly greed on both sides of the fence. But obviously the company's greed, whatever company it may be, automotive or otherwise in this country, is much bigger because they have much more at stake, and, you know, they control all the pieces. But this mentality that they have, you know, say last year they made $100 million in profit, and this year they only made $95 million. You know, the idea that, we lost money, you know, that's got to go.
Sure.
I mean, you can't have a banner year, for Christ's sake, every year. It's just not going to happen. But I do see, you're talking about the middle-class incomes and the decent wages, and I agree. I think everybody should be able to earn a decent wage. But it should all be relative, you know, to whatever environment and economy you're living in. But I do see a lot of folks since I've been on this other side with the sales job and being a supplier, they're carrying a lot of dead weight, too. And I think that's part of the problem, that the union has kind of metamorphosed into a bodyguard of sorts, or, you know, a safety net for people who don't want to do their job or don't appreciate their job. They don't have much help anymore for a guy who's a stand-up guy or girl and come to work every day and do the job and do what's expected of them and don't cause any problems. The only people they seem to have help for are the ones who are constantly in the attendance program, you know, don't want to do their job, spend more effort and energy trying to get out of something.
I'll tell you, Danny, if you were in the room with a bunch of UAW workers, I'd be running for the door.
Well, that's the truth, Peter.
I mean, the guys I know that work in auto work hard, it's like I said, they don't work like slaves, and well, they shouldn't. There ought to be some... there ought to be human beings and our needs first. And I have a pretty cushy job where I can play play CDs on an HD station and do a talk show like this. The idea of doing industrial work, for 30 or 40 years, like some of our callers have talked about, and hearing somebody that says they want them to work harder at it, I don't know. You know, look, this is the wealthiest country in the world, and there should have been enough flexibility within the economic system to have not allowed this happen, and to try to put off the problems on people that are working there. And for one thing, if let's say all those problems exist, that's a management problem. I mean, anybody knows that everything can go to hell unless there's proper supervision and what have you. And do unions try to just protect jobs regardless? Yeah, well, that's what they're about. They're not having a mean, lean machine. They're about trying to protect their members. I mean, sometimes they don't even do a good job of protecting their members. I mean, usually the complaints of members against the unions and is that they're not doing a good enough job protecting unions. They're not stopping the management from having all the control over them and what have you. All right, well, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. It's getting late. We're going to have to get in these calls very, very quickly. I think here's Vern. Vern's in Roseville. Vern, you're on the air.
Hey, Vern. Hi, Peter. How are you?
Good, good, good.
First of all, in regards to your last caller, okay, I lost my brother in January, and I lost my mom day before Mother's Day. Mm-hmm. I did not get paid a dime of money because I was on FMLA.
What's FMLA?
FLMA, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I didn't get paid a dime. The company did not pay me a dime. Now, obviously you're going to have a lot of people out there that are anti-union right now because it's hard times, you know what I mean? But it just simply, I don't know what people think of these days. You know, it's really bad out here. And when you miss time from work, the union is there to help you, and the company, if it wasn't for the unions, you'd just be getting, buffaloed by everyone.
Yeah, well, that is what unions do. They protect workers. Is it always done in the absolute 100% best way? No, sometimes when, let me just leave it at that because I got to kind of blast through these last calls. Thank you very much. Hey, I wanted to say thank you to Roscoe on behalf of myself and Jolene for sending those two T-shirts. I'm not sure where I'm going to be able to wear them. Roscoe runs Johnson Tattoo on Ecorse Road in Taylor, Michigan, and is usually listening. So thank you, Roscoe. I appreciate it very much. Here's Jim in Dearborn. Jim, hi. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. Red Wing Shoes out of Minnesota also makes shoes in America, I'm quite sure. And also that FLMA, I think it refers to family leave.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And then one other real quick thing, I don't know if you're familiar along the lines of buying in America and so on. Are you familiar with Co-op America? It seems to be a really good group. I've just gotten some directories from them. They profile companies all through the country that are, very highly evolved sociologically. They're profiled companies that are really good for their workers and so on.
Sure.
Seems to be a really good group. Anyway, I know you got a lot of other
calls. Let me just say this, Jim. You know what is unfortunate? It is actually a task in order to do anything from buy environmentally and socially conscious, or even if anybody's got any money left to invest in that way, it shouldn't be such a task.
I mean, right.
We should be able to make purchases that actually supports our community rather than some firm that's invested in some sweatshop in China.
Exactly.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
All right. Appreciate your call. Let's see. Here is Kim. Kim's in Highland. Hi, Kim. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Doing good.
Okay. Just a quick point about Walmart and their wages, because the minimum wage has been so low for all the Bush administration.
Right.
And that wouldn't Walmart, they keep their wages are so low, and other places too, that they call their property. So then the taxpayers, the citizens, end up paying for Walmart wages, in essence, because they have to pay for Medicaid or whatever that these people qualify for.
Yeah, we're actually subsidizing Walmart, the company with the biggest revenue in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to make that point.
All right. Thank you very much. No, I think that's a very important one. Thank you. And last but not least, it's Maurice from Detroit. Maurice, thanks for being so patient.
Hello, Peter. Hello, Jolene, not being there. You know, I've just been thinking about this economy thing. A better way to mess up the economy on purpose, get the two big mortgage companies, then mess up Wall Street. Wall Street dropped down so many points, it's going to make the economy, you know, go up and down. People won't buy no car. That's one of the reasons maybe why the big three is in the situation they're in.
Yeah, well, for sure. And, man, I mean, it was like at 13,500, it's down to 8,000. Wow, that's some trouble. Thank you for being our last caller. Thanks to all of you for listening and for calling. And we'll be doing it once again, and that will be next week. Jolene Jordan will be back. And stay tuned. Got a couple of interesting interviews. One about just what we've been talking about, the bailout, and then an amazing story by an Iraqi American who has written a book called "Shoot an Iraqi." We'll talk soon.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this. Night to 10 with Meltdown. It's like getting hit in the head by a 2x4 with a nail in it. Mandatory Metallica. Now, it's your triple play of the mighty Metallica with a big unit every weekday night at 10. Exclusively from your one and only Metallica station. 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks.
What if I told you that you could put up a brand new building and save up to half the cost and up to half the time as similar conventional construction? It probably sounds too good to be true. Well, just by picking up the phone, I can prove it to you. If you need retail, office, or warehouse space, or if your church or school wants to expand and save money, you need General Steel. Call today, and we'll prove to you that your new building can go up in about half the time, and you'll save up to half the cost. Dial 1-800-220-4155. We'll help you customize your building. You choose the size. You can even add the look of brick, stucco, or stone to achieve the look you want.
If you still think this sounds too good to be true, then pick up the phone and call. The information is free when you call 1-800-220-4155. Call General Steel and find out how you can put up a brand new building in about half the time and save up to half the cost of similar conventional construction. Call now, 1-800-220-4155, 1-800-220-4155.
What could be the biggest financial setback of your life? It's not losing a bet or making a bad investment. It's bankruptcy. And if you have too much credit card debt, you may be closer than you ever imagined. If you have over $12,000 in credit card debt, call an advocate who understands debt problems and how to fix them. Your advocate is Debt Settlement USA. Call for a free consultation at 1-877-560-8877. Debt Settlement USA has a proven debt reduction program that can cut the amount you owe and get you out of debt faster than you could on your own. If you have over $12,000 in credit card debt, call Debt Settlement USA for a free consultation. 1-877-560-8877. Your call is confidential with no obligation. Not available in all states. Debt Settlement USA can help you get out of debt faster than you think. Call now. 1-877-560-8877. That's 1-877-560-8877.
Does your furnace need repair? Just go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Is your roof leaking, or are you ready to replace your windows? Log on to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Big or small, no matter what your home improvement need, now it's easy to find the right home pro at fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic is a free online source of licensed and insured contractors in hundreds of home improvement categories. You can have instant access to roofers, plumbers, maids,
lights, handymen, chimney sweeps, remodelers, and many other professionals. Visit fixitfast.servicemagic.com and find the right home pro for your project. It's easy and it's free, and it's the source to find neighbor-recommended contractors in your area. Now you can hire a pre-screened home pro with confidence. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's quick, it's free, and there's no obligation. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. That's fixitfast.servicemagic.com.
Attention, Celtrixa is currently seeking participants with stretch marks. If you have stretch marks due to weight gain, pregnancy, even bodybuilding, you are eligible to try Celtrixa free. Celtrixa was introduced to improve skin and has now been shown to dramatically reduce the size and depth of stretch marks on any area of the body. It effectively fades even very dark stretch marks as it repairs the damaged skin. To participate in a Celtrixa trial and see results risk-free, call 1-800-962-1055. Stretch marks can mar and damage the skin, making the body look unattractive. But right now, you can join the thousands of people who have seen stretch marks diminish and fade, watched as ugly zipper-like marks began to repair themselves. Participate in the free trial by calling today. If you're serious about getting rid of your stretch marks, you are eligible to participate and experience a free trial of Celtrixa. For your free trial, call this number today. 1-800-962-1055. 1-800-962-1055. 1-800-962-1055.
Is your credit score holding you back? Are you paying more for everything just because you don't have perfect credit? Well, it's not your fault. Credit card companies are doing everything they can to keep you in debt and never let you escape. But I've got a system that can fix your credit score once and for all. And I'm going to send you a free tape showing you the power of my proven system today.
My credit score is now 758. My wife and I are shouting for joy right now.
Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. My system doesn't just fix your credit score, it will permanently rebuild your credit status so it can never come back to haunt you again. It works no matter how bad your credit is or how much debt you have.
Our credit score was in the low 600s and now we're at 780.
You can wipe the slate clean once and for all. Call right now and I'll rush you my free tape. For your free tape, call 1-800-337-1713. That's 1-800-337-1713. 1-800-337-1713.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. Well, I think everybody in this region of the country and of the world knows that the auto companies are facing some hard times. In fact, Yahoo News said that the auto executives are pleading with Congress for a bailout loan. And this is some serious, this is a serious point in our history here. And it's still up for grabs which way it is going to go. Helping us understand it all is Daniel J. Weiss. He works with the Center for American Progress, and he is a senior fellow and director of climate strategy there. We're reaching him at his Washington office. Daniel J. Weiss, actually, welcome back home, right?
That's right, Peter. Thank you for having me. And I am a native of Oak Park, Michigan, and lived in Ann Arbor for 5 years.
Well, now, you wrote an article for Center for American Progress, which is AmericanProgress.org, a site I check every single day, and I would advise others as well. It's called Bridge Loan to the 21st Century. It doesn't look good at this point, does it, as we record this on the Thursday before the Sunday it's airing?
Well, unfortunately, the auto company executives did themselves a great disservice with their appearances in Washington back in November. First, they did a very dumb thing by flying in their own individual private jets. But secondly, they really didn't present much of a plan for recovery to the Congress, and basically was here asking for a blank check. Now they've come back with a lot more specifics, and yet they face a very wary and skeptical Congress that they're going to have to convince. One of the things that's really important to note about how important this is that, you know, obviously Michigan is very directly tied to the auto industry, but one in every 10 jobs in America is related to the auto industry. So if any or of all these companies fail, it will have a devastating impact for Michigan and across the country.
Well, it actually, as we all know by now, and they know, the executives of the big three, that it was a PR disaster for them to fly here rather than as this time they took the road in their hybrids. But one would think that making decisions that are this momentous, that appearances wouldn't be that important, but it seems to be. I mean, you mentioned it first.
Well, you know, as the politics involves a lot of symbols. But I think another piece of what got them such a chilly reception was the fact that they basically asked for a blank check when they were here last time. Now they have concrete plans. In fact, Ford Motor Company isn't asking for any loans at all, but just for a line of credit should they need it next year. GM and Chrysler, on the other hand, are asking for about $23, $24 billion in loans combined to get them through the next year. Now, it's important to note that there ought to be some conditions on these. First, they ought to make sure that there's not excess executive compensation, no golden parachutes. The companies have already agreed to get rid of their bonuses. Their CEOs are going to work for a dollar a year. Also, we need them to continue to commit to build the cars of the future. They need to continue to work on research, development, and production of super-efficient cars like the General Motors Volt, which is a car that will be out in 2010 that is what's called a plug-in hybrid electric vehicle. It has both a battery and a gas tank. The battery should be enough to drive you for 40 miles in a day, which is about how far the average person drives in a day, before it switches over to gasoline. Then you recharge it overnight at home. The Volt could end up getting 100 or 200 miles to the gallon. It could be a game changer as far as fuel efficiency and automotive technology. We need to keep General Motors afloat so they can produce the Volt, get it on the road, and start selling them. That's why helping them is so important.
Now, the Ford CEO, Alan Mulally, said that we've made a lot of mistakes from which we're learning. And he says, we produce more vehicles than our customers wanted, then slash prices. He sees that as the basis of the predicament that they found themselves in. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think there was two reasons for their current dire straits. First was back in January, gasoline and oil prices started rising. They hit records in early March, and they just kept on going. So this summer and spring and summer, people wanted fuel-efficient cars, which isn't really what Detroit has focused on. Despite all the warnings over all the years, instead, their models have been based on the assumption of cheap oil forever. Now we know that's not going to last.
Is it not going to last? Let's just stick on that. I mean, right now, I just went to my neighborhood Citgo dealer, and it was, I think, $154.
The low prices now are a great relief to American families. But the reality is, as soon as the world's economy recovers, demand is going to continue to grow for oil. Oil production is slowing. It costs more money to get oil out of the ground than it used to. And places where we're going to go next are very expensive to develop. So, you know, all the analysts predict we're going to have $100 to $200 barrel oil within the next few years, and it's going to stay there. So they need to build super efficient cars to reduce our oil dependence. The second thing that caught the oil companies short was not due to their own device. You know, building gas guzzlers was their fault. But the credit crunch that hit this fall was not their fault. Not only can they not get the loans that they need to conduct their business, you know, they often get short-term or overnight loans to cover payments to this person or that, but their customers cannot get loans to buy cars. Customers that had a credit rating that would have been easy to buy a car a year ago are now being denied. And so this credit freeze, which is no fault of their own, has really brought them low. You know, sales were off almost 40% last month, to the lowest level since 1982.
Absolutely.
That's
incredible.
The kind of slump they're in now.
Yeah. Daniel J. Weiss from the Center for American Progress is my guest on the Peter Werby Show, and we're talking about the potential for a bailout or for loans, for a bridge loan to the 21st century, which is an article that Dan Weiss has written in the recent Center for American Progress. Yeah. Let's just go back a little to the cars. I mean, one of the arguments was that these big gas guzzlers, not only did they suit the American taste, but they were also what the car companies made big profits off of. And if you made these little cars, they don't make as much money.
That's absolutely right, Peter. And in fact, colleagues of mine at the Union of Concerned Scientists took off-the-shelf technology and designed a prototype SUV that could get 35 miles per gallon using technology that exists today. It would have cost a little bit more money. It would have cut into their profits. The big three said no. In addition, they spent the last 20 years fighting stricter fuel economy standards while their Japanese and other competitors have been focused on building cars that go much farther on a gallon of gas, even when oil prices were low. Toyota started working on the Prius, the hybrid electric vehicle, back in the mid-90s when gasoline was about as cheap as it is now, because they knew the era of cheap gas and cheap oil was not going to last forever. And it's that kind of short-sightedness on the part of the American companies that helped get them into the fix they're in.
Well, let's talk a little about the short-sightedness, perhaps, of the American people, because we have heard, certainly locally here, the entire Michigan delegation in Congress, Republicans and Democrats, all say, yes, that this bridge loan is necessary, or there's going to be catastrophic effects on the entire economy. And yet there was just this poll done, and 60% of the American people oppose it.
That's
extraordinary.
I think that reflects most directly the behavior of the big three CEOs last month. You know, that was all over the news, and I think this reflects that. But I sort of look at it differently. In the fall, Congress wrote basically a $700 billion blank check to bail out big financial companies and banks. Now the big three, which is the backbone of Americans' industrial economy, 1 in 10 jobs are related to the auto industry. The big three are asking for 5% of that. And so far, at least, they're getting pretty negative signals from Congress. And so, you know, that to me is very troubling.
There's this situation where we don't even know where all of this money is going to the financial institutions. There's not the transparency. There's not the plans that are being demanded from the auto companies.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, the head of the United Steelworkers said something really great the other day. He said, you know, Congress is willing to bail out companies where their workers take a shower before they go to work, but they're not willing to bail out companies where workers take their showers after work. In other words, white collar versus blue collar. And, you know, if one or all of the big three fail, it could have a catastrophic impact. The Center for Automotive Research in Ann Arbor predicts that all three companies fail, that it would cause 2.5 million people to lose their jobs, both for the auto companies, their suppliers, Tool and Die, and other related companies. Just to put that in perspective, that's twice as many people who have lost their job this year. These companies are too vital to be allowed to fail, but they need help to make sure they do the right thing and build that super efficient car of the future.
Now, there was a meeting on Wednesday in Detroit of UAW leaders, and UAW President Ron Gettelfinger says the union is willing to reopen the contracts, as he says, to help automakers. Today's Detroit Free Press, Thursday, December 4th, says UAW steps up to boost companies. Is there enough concessions there to actually have an impact on what the auto companies need?
The concessions will certainly help, but, you know, a lot of people in Congress want to blame the union and the people who actually do the work and build the cars for this situation they're in, and they're not at fault, in my view. The UAW made a lot of concessions in their contracts last year. Just yesterday, they agreed to make more sacrifices. I think that's a good thing. So now it's time for the Congress to step up and help this industry while making sure that they continue to build the super clean cars of the future. You know, one thing that's interesting that I think is not a good thing is that Senator Levin, among others, has proposed that they take this other set of loans that Congress has already approved to be used, that's supposed to be used to retool their factories so they can build these super efficient, clean cars, and use those money for the bridge loans instead. I think that's a really bad idea. First of all, the plans that all three companies have submitted for recovery to Congress indicate that they would rely on a significant portion of this retooling money, in addition to the bridge loans, to stay, survive and rejuvenate. Secondly, it's sort of like eating your seed corn. It might keep you full for today, but then you have nothing for tomorrow. This retooling money is vital to the future of the industry so they can change their factories and make the Chevy Volt, or, you know, Ford's going to be making their cars 40% more efficient in a few years. They need that retooling money to accomplish that goal.
Daniel J. Weiss is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. He's just written Bridge Loan to the 21st Century for the Center for American Progress, and you can go to AmericanProgress.org for to see that. There will also be a link on my website as well. The Washington Times and the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, both of which are extremely conservative publications, like so many, blame the situation that the automakers find themselves on the unions and the wages and benefits that they've been able to win over the years. And they said that union auto workers earn $75 an hour, which is, what does that come out? What is that, $150,000 a year, I guess that would be, or something, or more.
That's a ridiculous estimate. Right now, they make only a couple dollars more an hour if you can include salary and benefits compared to, you know, their Japanese counterparts. You know, one of the things that the U.S. has going against it, U.S. car companies have going against it, is the fact that we have no national health care system. In fact, Warren Buffett has said General Motors is a health and benefits company that makes cars on the side.
Sure.
Because the car companies are responsible for that. Every one of our competitors, including Canada, Japan, Germany, they all have national health care systems.
So why in the world, and excuse me for interrupting, but this is always, you know, someone said that they're constitutionally incapable. Their political constitution tells them, the auto companies, that they couldn't ask for a national health program. But you'd think that they and the United Auto Workers would be in the forefront. I know the UAW wants a national health program, but you would think that they would be vociferous about this, saying, you have to get the this load off of us and do what every other industrialized country in the world, particularly our competitors, do. And there's no mention of it.
Yeah, in fact, I think that that's part of the short-sightedness of their management because, again, just like the fact that they assumed that oil would always be cheap, they assumed that they could always handle the health care costs. It's interesting, you know, people don't want a national health care system because they say, oh, that's what Canada has. But now I just read that I think Toyota would locate a plant in Ontario rather than in the U.S. because they have no health care costs.
Yeah, I got to tell you, contrary to the most opinion, I don't think that the union should give up a thing. I don't think they created this mess. I don't think that the kind of concessions they give, although it's certainly you know, a bit of money, is going to be really what's going to push them up to the point, the auto companies up to where they want to be. And it's just a matter of the mistakes at the top wind up costing the guy and the gal on Main Street the most. Because what did those guys make here? You know, they say they're going to do a dollar a year. Well, I mean, what did they make last year? $13 million? You know, that would
I think the head of Ford made $22 million, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I don't know about you, Daniel Weiss, but that could keep me I could work for a dollar an hour after 1 year for quite a while, right?
That's right. I think it's important that the union did what it did yesterday because, from what I understand, a lot of the concessions are as much symbolic as they are monetary, that they're contributing as well. You know, one of the things that some people who oppose the loans have talked about is, well, let's do some sort of government-sponsored bankruptcy where you work out in advance how you're going to pay off your debts and all that, and then you go into bankruptcy. The problem with that is that could completely destroy the brands of these car companies. There was an independent survey done earlier this year that found that 4 out of 5 people would be unwilling to buy a car from a bankrupt company because they're worried about warranties, they're worried about service, they're worried about spare parts.
Of course, include me in that. I certainly wouldn't buy, it would be kind of foolish to buy a product from a company in bankruptcy.
That's right, and every American car company that's gone into bankruptcy ended up folding. So, you know, some of the opponents of AIDS say this is how we should do it, but that's really a way to destroy. Their goal is twofold. One is to destroy the United Auto Workers, but secondly is to basically destroy these brands. And interestingly enough, a lot of these politicians who want to do this come from the southeastern part of the country where they build cars there now, mostly foreign and almost all non-union plants.
Yeah, and they're building big ones. There's one right on the Georgia-Alabama border. I don't know if it's Kia or one of them, but it's like a billion-dollar facility that they're placing there. Just in passing, said the phrase, destroy the UAW. This is, in fact, one of the subterranean goals of some of these people involved in all this, because it relates directly to political power. I mean, one of the reasons that Barack Obama is the president-elect of the United States is because of the union movement and because of the United Auto Workers. And so many conservative programs are based around trying to erode the power of unions, because they see as both funding and foot soldiers for the Democratic Party, like the whole thing about vouchers with the National Education Association and the American Federation of Teachers. So there's always a lot of levels to this, isn't there?
Yeah, and they have another goal, too. The reason why some people propose to use the retooling money that's supposed to go to make the factories build the cleaner cars for the bridge loans is because that way they'll have a reason for the auto companies not meeting the new fuel economy standards. So that is a move that would actually weaken our ability to meet the new standards and increase our dependence on oil. One of the things that polls show is that Americans want to be free of some of their dependence on oil. And in fact, one approach that the car companies ought to have taken is to really make that the centerpiece of their rejuvenation, which is we want to build these super clean cars of the future to get America off of oil. And I think that would have been a much better selling point in addition to talking about the ripple effects through the economy.
Well, Dan White, one of your articles, in fact, the one before Bridge Loan to the 21st Century, was helping Detroit go green, and you talked before about GM building the Volt. When could we see those actually on the street?
The Volt is supposed to be produced for sale in 2010, assuming that GM can make it till then, and they have the resources to continue the work on it. And like I said earlier, that's going to be a game changer. That car could get 100 to 200 miles a gallon, depending on how far you drive in a day.
So even if it, I don't know what the price tag is on it, but even if it was a little pricey, given that kind of mileage, it would be a good buy.
It would be. It will be pricey. It'll cost $40,000 or so for the first model, but there's a tax credit that comes with it for $7,000. One of the things that we ought to do to help get these cars on the road faster and cheaper is that once it's proven that the Volt will work, the federal government ought to buy a large number of them for their fleets, and that way it'll help lower the production costs and lower the economies and improve the economies of scale, so that way ordinary folks can buy them.
Have we heard from the president-elect on this, on the bailout, on the proposed bridge loan for the auto companies?
President-elect Obama said back in November that we're not going to, you know, pay for a bridge to nowhere. We want to pay for a bridge to somewhere. You know, and that reflects the fact that the big three CEOs came to Washington and asked for a blank check. I think that the comments he made yesterday were more encouraging, though still cautious and noncommittal, but saying, you know, they put plans on the table. One of the things that my article does at AmericanProgress.org is looks at the fuel economy elements of the three companies' plans, and basically I would give Ford a B+, General Motors would get a B or B-, and Chrysler's fuel economy plans gets it incomplete. Their plan is really pretty unspecific and vague.
Is there, will some of these brands come to an end as people have spoken about?
Well, one of the things they're talking about in any restructuring is that they would shed some brands. One brand that General Motors ought to shed is Hummer, which they've talked about getting rid of. They've tried to sell it this year, but no one wants to buy it.
Yeah.
Saturn is another brand they've talked about shredding. Saab, Ford may sell its stake in Volvo. So they're definitely going to be consolidating the number and the brands that they have to sell, and concentrating hopefully on building some high quality, well built, super fuel-efficient cars, because that's what their competitors from other countries are building right now.
Yeah, the Hummer at the height of the Iraq War somehow resonated with the symbolism of it and its power and its militaristic look and all that. But somehow you see these going down the street. And dear listener, if you're if you've got one, my apologies to you. But it doesn't seem to be the vehicle for the age, does it?
No, it's a symbol of cheap, inexhaustible supply of oil, and we have left that era, and it's not coming back. Oil and gasoline may be relatively cheap right now, which is a good break for families that are struggling. But in the long run, like it or not, because of increased worldwide demand from China and India, as well as the slowdown in production and increased cost of production of oil, high oil prices are going to be here for the long term.
And you think the American people will like to buy these small cars? I drive a full-size car mainly because I've always felt uncomfortable, because if you've got some little, some little teeny car and there's the Hummers and F-150s next to you, it makes me feel kind of unsafe. So even though I've got a little less gas mileage, I've got a full-size vehicle. Are we, as Americans, going to really go for the small ones?
Well, the reason why people feel unsafe in the small cars, because there's so many big SUVs and Hummers and other cars like that out on the road. Statistically, the bigger cars are more dangerous, even though the perception is the small car is. And, one of the things that we're going to be doing now is, in addition to making engines that are much more efficient and use less gasoline, we're going to build these cars out of newer, stronger materials that are lighter, so it increases efficiency, and stronger, so they are made safely. And you also have to remember, cars like the Ford Focus get 60 miles a gallon, and, it's sold in Europe, and not really the same version isn't sold here. Well, Ford's now talking about building a domestic version of the European Focus that will get far better fuel economy than some other cars.
Well, we are out of time for this enlightening discussion, but oftentimes after ones like this, a guest will urge people to write their congressperson, and every single congressman, Republican and Democrat, are on board with this. Is there anything the individual can do? I mean, it seems like we're just hoping. We're just waiting and hoping that the biggies don't really send it all down the tubes.
That's right, and not to be partisan about it, but frankly, so far, most of the opposition to the bridge loans have come from Republican senators, much more so than Democrats. And to get it passed through the Senate, you're going to need a 60-vote supermajority. And so that means, in addition, even if you got every Democratic vote, you're going to need at least 9 Republicans to vote for that, and that's going to be a tall order. And it's supposed to happen the week of December 8th. We'll see if it does.
Well, this is airing on December 7th, so thank you so much, Daniel J. Weiss. He is the author of the article Bridge Loan to the 21st Century. I would highly recommend looking at it at the Center for American Progress. It's at AmericanProgress.org. Also, I'll have a link to it on my site, PeterWerby.com. Thank you so much, and appreciate your time, Daniel J. Weiss.
Thanks for having me, Peter.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
We wanted to give you more on the riff, but we ran out of somewhere to put it all. We said, screw it. Let's make a whole nother radio station.
What's that sound?
Riff 2. It's music made for the Motor City and totally commercial free. Log on from anywhere in the world at riff2.com. Everything that rocks.
What exactly is telemetrics and what does it mean to me?
How does changing light bulbs save me money?
Where are the best places to find organically grown foods?
When will Michigan be seeing an increase in green building?
What are some easy steps my family can take to be more green?
How can my coworkers and I start a recycling program at work?
Got lots of questions on Michigan's green future? Get lots of answers at movingmichiganforward.com. You can also join the discussion, offer your ideas, suggestions, and advice on how we can all work together to live greener in Michigan. MovingMichiganForward.com, in partnership with Next Energy, is brought to you in part by IBEW Local 58 and NECA Signatory Employers, The Good Food Company, and Charter One.
Got lots of questions on Michigan's green future? Get lots of answers at MovingMichiganForward.com.
MovingMichiganForward.com. Learn, share, grow, make your future green at MovingMichiganForward.com.
If you want a new computer but think you can't get credit terms, listen to this. Now you're approved for a brand new Dell, HP, or other name brand computer for just $29.99 a week. There's no credit check, no hassles, and you won't be turned down. Just call Tronics Country at 1-800-990-2258. If you have a bank account and can afford weekly payments of just $29.99 for 12 months, you're approved for a new computer, guaranteed. Even if you have bad credit or no credit, you will not be turned down. And with Tronics Country's program, you could also improve your credit rating. Call Tronics Country now, and you can own a lightning-fast computer or wireless laptop with no hassles or delays. Call right now, and with your paid purchase, you'll also get a free 20-inch LCD TV and a free color printer. Call Tronics Country right now at 1-800-990-2258. 1-800-990-2258. That's 1-800-990-2258.
If you have acne, here's a phone number you need to call. 1-800-335-4191. Right now, we're looking for the biggest skeptics out there to test out a skin-clearing breakthrough risk-free. People who are sick and tired of wasting money on acne products that just don't work. If that's you, give us a call. We're going to prove you can make your acne disappear and have clear skin by sending you a 60-day trial of Proactive Solution absolutely risk-free with our compliments. Find out how to get your risk-free 60-day trial by calling 1-800-335-4191. Our combination therapy system uses prescription-grade acne medicine and soothing spa-quality botanicals to create a powerful acne-fighting system. It's so effective, it transforms blemishes and bumps into clear, smooth skin and skeptics into believers. You can have beautiful, healthy-looking skin. Put us to the test, and we'll prove it. Get your risk-free 60-day trial by calling now toll-free. 1-800-335-4191. 1-800-335-4191.
Are the arteries in your home clogged? The damaging limescale from hard water is like blockage in your pipes. It affects your water pressure and costs you more than you realize in energy repairs and appliance replacement, as much as $1,200 a year. Now, there's an easy solution to hard water problems that puts more flow in your system and avoids salts, chemicals, and magnetic coils. It's HydraCare, the patented unit sold worldwide. HydraCare is tested by energy utilities and is totally maintenance-free. Just clip it onto your water pipe, and HydraCare will break up and prevent limescale buildup in your appliances and throughout your plumbing system, guaranteed. Limescale buildup can mean higher energy costs. If your home has reduced water pressure, get those old pipes flowing again. Call HydraCare right now for free information. Call 1-888-889-6126 or log on to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now 1-888-889-6126.
Prices include 5% down payment at 7.5% APR over 30 years.
Wow, look at this place. 4 bedrooms, 2 baths.
Yeah, I know.
Jeez, you're not even 30. We have the same salary, Maggie. How can you afford all this?
My mortgage payment is less than $300 a month.
What? That's less than I pay for rent. How did you...
All I did was call BNI for a list of homes that are being sold for back taxes or foreclosure.
Home foreclosures are on the rise. That means there are great deals out there, especially for first-time home buyers. Like this listing, a 4-bedroom, 2-bath going for under $20,000. That's just $199 a month. Listings go fast, so call BNI for a list of these homes today. Call 1-800-844-1134.
I could actually afford to own my own home.
Yeah, and it's easy. Just call BNI for the list.
Properties that have been foreclosed or repossessed are a real bargain and sometimes sell for little money down. For a list of homes in your area, call 1-800-844-1134. 1-800-844-1134. That's 1-800-844-1134.
In national news, the New York Mint is releasing to the public a limited number of $100 Union Silver coins. At the end of this broadcast, we'll provide a toll-free number you can call to receive free information and a free DVD. Sketches of the coin were recently discovered deep in the vaults of the Smithsonian. The $100 Union was proposed by George T. Morgan, who also designed the Morgan Silver Dollar. It was to be the largest coin ever in size and denomination, and it weighs in at a hefty 1.5 ounces. In a startling announcement, the New York Mint plans to release a limited quantity of $100 Union silver coins to the public. The silver $100 Union proofs are available on a first-come, first-served basis by calling 1-800-957-5473. Please dial carefully. To receive the free collector's DVD containing the full story on this and many other coins, the number is 1-800-957-5473. That's 1-800-957-5473.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. I can't begin to count how many times we've talked about the war in Iraq and its occupation over the last, what is it now, seven going on 8 years. And I look for ways that we can continue having this in our consciousness, because people are still dying, lives are still being disrupted, refugees are still being created, infrastructures are being destroyed, suicide bombers continue. So even though with what we're facing economically, the war, although in its most ferocious stages, has tamped down considerably, it still continues. So this is a book by an author that approaches this from, I think you will agree when we begin our conversation, that is extraordinarily unique. Well, who I'm going to be interviewing is Iraqi-born artist Wafa Bilal, and he is right now a professor, an assistant professor at New York University's Tisch School of the Arts, and he has exhibited his artwork worldwide, including Baghdad, but also the Netherlands, Thailand, Croatia, as well as the Museum of Contemporary Photography in Chicago, the Milwaukee Art Museum, and considerable number of other places as well. His book is called Shoot in Iraqi: Art, Life, and Resistance Under the Sun, and it's written with Carrie Leiterson. And we welcome Wafa Bilal from his home in New York City. Welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thanks a lot, Peter. It is really a pleasure to be on your show.
Now, this is such an extraordinary story, and rather than getting right into what the title refers to, Shoot in Iraqi, let's just get a little of your personal history, because you were born in Iraq under Saddam Hussein, and you've been here. You've come to the United States in 1992. You're an American citizen, so you've been here a very long time. But tell us some of your childhood and where you were raised and the circumstances of how you got to the United States.
I was born in the holy city of Najaf. That's a holy Shia center for the entire world, and it's about 80 kilometers south of Baghdad, and in the 1966. And that was just a few years before the Ba'ath Revolution. And when I grew up under the regime of Saddam Hussein. Basically, one of the just kids who idolized the Ba'ath Party and didn't see the danger that is behind Saddam and his regime.
Mm-hmm. Let me just interrupt to tell people that you're talking about the Ba'ath Party, B-A-A-T-H, and it was Saddam Hussein's party.
Yes.
And it was a totalitarian party in that it totalized all political thought and a lot of cultural thought, right?
Very much so, and I may add also that the regime, Saddam's regime and the Ba'ath Party, were brought to Iraq by the CIA in the early 60s, and it continued, the CIA and the United States continued to support the regime until it toppled in 2003. But going back to the childhood, very much idolized the regime, idolized Saddam, and idolized the party as well. But growing up and see how the regime of Saddam is personally dismantle any democratic infrastructure and it become a totalitarian regime that it only serve one man, and any person that opposed him will be eliminated, and sometimes in a brutal way and graphic way, by tying him to the nearest pole and shoot him.
Hmm.
So I early on
Did you actually see any of that? Were you aware personally of how brutal and oppressive Saddam Hussein was?
As a kid, no. I mean, kid growing up, Saddam's tried to replace the allegiance of the family, of the tribe, to the allegiance to the state. And he was very successful. As kids, he take us kids and open art centers, a youth center, supply us with anything. And that was part of the plan, is to gain our trust. And in fact, it got to the point when kids start reporting their on their dads and family members that's been the family members being against the state. And then in the 80s, things start changing. Before the 80s, before 1880 war with Iran, Saddam had very good control over Iraq. And in 1980, Saddam decided to attack Iran and topple the regime of Khomeini, which is just a very young regime, took over Iran in the revolution in 1997. And from that point, we start seeing bodies arrive to Najaf and the Holy City. A lot of Shiites are buried in Najaf. And we saw the regime becoming more and more brutal in his effort to win the war, an effort to send the young Iraqis to the front line. Then the money started dwindling from the art centers, and we start opening our mind to how to the direction that Saddam was taking the country, and how families are losing just members on a daily basis.
Wasn't there about I think a million people, a million soldiers died during the Iran-Iraq War of the 1980s. I mean, it's just a slaughter that the United States has never even faced.
Very true, very true. I mean, 1 million people on both sides, on the Iraqi side and on the Iranian side. And imagine the country was about 13 million people at the time. Imagine losing 1 million people over the period of 8 years, from 1980 to 88. Mm-hmm. And that has a very big impact on Iraqi, and devastated the Iraqis, but also brought the wars of the regime. And he starts capturing people on the street and sending them to the front line. And if people opposed to that, go on to the front line, they will be captured and executed sometime publicly.
Did you have family members that were involved in the fighting?
In the front line, I had my brother for a long period of time, and I have one of my cousins that was executed for being accused of belonging to another party. And that was the turning point for me, when I saw how my cousin was just unjustifiably executed. I very much woke up and I start just opposing to the regime.
Let me reintroduce you as well. My guest is Wafaa Bilal. He is an Iraqi-American. He's been here since 1992. He teaches art in New York City, and his book, published by City Lights, is Shoot an Iraqi, Art, Life, and Resistance Under the Gun. And we'll get to the extraordinary part that art plays in this story in just a little while. Wafa, are you from a Shiite background?
My family, yeah. I am a Shiite. I grew up in the holy city of Najaf, and most of the south of Iraq and big part of Baghdad are Shiite. So Saddam's in particular oppressed the Shiite in Iraq, because he's from a Sunni background, and Iran is mostly Shiite. So he was from the very beginning fighting the Shiite, and the Shiite never submit to his rule, and they always fought him politically and sometimes military within inside Iraq. But he was very afraid of the alliance of the Shiite of Iran and Shiite of Iraq, and that was part of why he attacked Iran right away after Khomeini took over.
Yeah, in 1979 when Khomeini took over,
exactly.
And then the war began in 1980. You talk in your book, Shoot an Iraqi, that you were forced to flee in the chaotic aftermath of the first Gulf War. What were the circumstances that that drove you out of the country?
Yeah, well, this brings back to us to my days in college. And what happened is when I finished high school, I applied to art school, and that was one of my dreams as a kid to finish, to go to art school, to the Academy of Baghdad. And when I was, when I applied, I was rejected because of the executed cousin, and then I was sent to study geology and geography at the University of Baghdad. Through the years, about 5 years at the university, I produced an art show that was critical of the regime in a direct way or indirect way. And other consequences, sometimes the show will be closed permanently. Sometimes the show will be confiscated. And every time I have a show, I will be dragged to the security office at the University of Baghdad. And in 1990, when the regime invaded Kuwait, I was in the last year of college at the University of Baghdad, and the regime come and to ask us to volunteer to go to war, and I was one of the people who are publicly refused to do such a thing, and I know my days were numbered at that time, and I was on the run. So I left Baghdad to Najaf, and from Najaf, when I got there, the war started. The United States started bombing, and the Allies started bombing to free Kuwait. And that lasted about 40 days or so. But right after that, the uprising took place in Iraq against the Saddam regime.
This was in the south where the Shiites,
and
they initially were pretty much encouraged to do so.
Well, very much so.
Yeah, by George Bush the First.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. And when he basically he gave a televised speech to the entire Iraqi nation and asking them to rebel against Saddam, and the United States will help them. And in fact, it was on the contrary. We were very surprised to see George Bush the senior helping Saddam to quell the uprising instead of helping people. So I basically was cornered because Saddam starts, after the uprising and people captured the city, Saddam starts moving from Baghdad to all the way to Basra to capture the cities back, and he brutally bombed them with every weapon he can use under the watch of United States. And I was moving ahead of the military one city by one until I got to Kuwait. And in Kuwait, I crossed the border against the will of Kuwaitis, and I was arrested. But luckily, I was let out and stayed on the border for another 40 days when later we were under the protection of United States Army, and later we were transferred to refugee camps in Saudi Arabia when I spent 2 years there.
And then you, in fact, I'm finding this fascinating because we just look at the bigger picture, and when we hear how the war there affected people directly,
yeah,
it takes on a different character to it. The book is Shoot an Iraqi, Art, Life, and Resistance Under the Sun. My guest is Wafa Bilal. and also writing the book along with him, Carrie Leiterson. Let's do this, because I want to hear more of this, but I also want to get people up to the subtitle of Art, Life, and Resistance Under the Gun. Now, you came here in 1992. You became an American citizen, an artist whose works have been shown all over the world, and then suddenly, you realize that in Iraq, during the 90s, there's this blockade by the United States that's causing all sorts of deaths there of Iraqi people. And then by 2002, there's the war again, in the shadows of war return. And yet your family was all in Iraq, right?
Very much so. I mean, I left Iraq. I was running, and the only other person, my brother, who in fact lives in Detroit right now. But the entire family left in Iraq, and one thing many people didn't know, that after the war ended in 1991, there was an embargo, a blockade against Iraq that lasted almost 10 years. And maybe more 10 years. And as a consequence, 1.5 million Iraqi lost their lives because of that, and mostly kids and older. And and the family, my immediate family, were impacted very strong. And we lost my grandfather, my grandmother, due to very simple thing. Because they cannot afford buying simple medication. And then we lost one thing that is very important. Just our childhood memories revolve around the place we grew up, our grandfather's home. And the family were forced to sell it for nothing just so they could survive for a few months.
So you are living in the safety and comfort of the United States, and here your relatives back in the old country, as we used to call it, are suffering this great travail. What were your emotions at this period?
The emotion was very high, and I think being an artist helped me a lot to deal with this duality, just because being here, and you see there is just a great injustice being done to the Iraqi people. In fact, the embargo never affected Saddam because it made him even stronger. And in fact, some of Bush's administration, like Dick Cheney, was dealing with him directly, buying the oil, or indirectly sometimes. So what I did through the 90s, I focused my effort in exposing how the embargo hurting the Iraqi people by building shows, by going on the road for speaking tours, just to, one, to raise awareness, and I saw that is a great deal since I'm here in the United States. If anything could change, it has to come from the people, and that's why I have so much faith in the people to change the status quo. Mm-hmm. And instead of being against the people of the United States, I saw them as a victim as well of this political machine of the government. And I very much start connecting with people through my art show. I start connecting to people by talking to them, going from one state to another to raise awareness of the embargo. And then the war, or just the drums of a new war against Iraq, we start hearing it in 2002 and early 2003, and I couldn't even believe it. We're going to go to another war with Iraq.
And then it occurred, and again, civilians are being killed, and your own brother was killed in Iraq by a U.S. bomb, and not by a human being, but by an unmanned predator drone. Tell us what you discovered after this terrible event occurred, that about what you saw about that. Yeah.
Well, in 2003, I was one of a few Iraqis who opposed the war, Iraqis in the United States opposing the war, because what I saw just the people going to be affected, not Saddam's regime. And I opposed it from the very beginning, and I know there are going to be great losses and by turning Iraq to a war zone. So in 2004, unfortunately, I received the news that is one of my brothers was killed in Iraq. And at the beginning, I didn't get the details from the family how he was killed. But then I learned he was on the street when a drone plane scoped the city, and then an air-to-service missile come to where he was standing in a checkpoint and killed him instantly.
And this, you watched a TV interview and found out that a young U.S. soldier whose job it was to launch missiles into Iraq from a computer in Colorado had been the one that had pushed the button. And
Very much so. So from 2004, and I have to say 2 months later, we lost my father because he was grieving and he couldn't handle the shock of losing his son all of a sudden. So we lost him 2 months later. But I continue to think how I could connect these two zones together, the comfortable zone here, which I live in, and there the war zone, the conflict zone.
So we get actually now to the title of your book, which we've been holding people in suspense now for almost 20 minutes.
Yes.
We just have a few minutes left, so we should probably go directly to that. The book is Shoot an Iraqi, Art, Life, and Resistance Under the Sun, Wafa Bilal and Carrie Leiterson. And you did essentially an art installation, Domestic Tension.
Yes.
And that's where the title Shoot an Iraqi. Tell us about that.
Exactly. So in 2007, I was watching the news when I saw an interview with a soldier that's directing drone planes and dropping missiles on Iraq. And when she was asked by the reporter if she had any remorse on people's lives, she said, "No, I trust the order of my superiors." And it really shocked me how we become disconnected even by targeting other people in other countries. And that's when the idea come, and the idea was, I wanted to demonstrate how we are disconnected. So what I did, I moved my living space to a gallery space. I built a robot that shoot paintball at me, and I stayed in the gallery for 30 days. During that 30 days, I had people from 136 countries shooting at me with 80 million hits on the website and 65,000 times I was shot at. I never left the gallery space, and during that time, I was constantly talking to people on a chat room, which is where they could see me and talk to me 24 hours, 7 days a week for 30 days.
Let me just summarize this. So you set up an installation, essentially, that people, by just a mouse click, could shoot you with a paintball. You were shot 60,000 times. Your site had millions of hits to it. And what did you think about the fact? Did it hurt when you got hit by a paintball?
It does. I mean, anybody who plays paintball, it just really hurts. And these guns are designed to shoot from 200 feet, and the gun was about 20 feet from me. It hurt a lot, but also I learned great deals about myself, about my people, and how to deal with the losses as well. I denied I lost my brother, I lost my father, until I was emotionally and physically exhausted in the project, and I finally admit the losses. But I think the most thing that fascinated me is just how the platform become a place for people to express their thoughts, people to connect to each other, people to talk about issues like war, and many of us here in the comfortable zone are reluctant to talk about it. And all of a sudden, you see this side that you could shoot somebody and all the traffic coming in. But then you encounter, this is not just a playful game. This is really human being is being shot at.
Yeah, were you shocked that you were shot at so many times with the paintballs?
Yes.
Yeah, and I see from your book, Shoot an Iraqi, that some of the what was said in the chat room was also pretty shocking, pretty racist,
very
pretty
brutal,
mean.
Very racist. I mean, it's very brutal, and I think that's the nature of being disconnected. It's just because we part of it is we demonize others because we are unaware of that culture. And I think the website demonstrate, the chat room demonstrate that very well by bringing the brutality in people to express themselves. And there are just brutal moments, but there are also wonderful moments happen there when a group of people decide to establish the virtual human shield, and for many days they start defending me by taking the gun and aiming it to the left side, so preventing other people from shooting directly at me.
Oh, well, there is hope.
Of course, and I think that's what we have to believe in, because that's the only thing left to us, hope, and also we have to be determined to gain our freedom, not only freedom, but we have to be determined to ask for justice to other countries as well.
Well, you know, we're almost out of time completely, and I would leave you with the last word, Wafa Bilal. It looks like things are beginning to come to the end of this seemingly endless war, an occupation that the United States launched, all on the basis of lies, of course. Is there hope for Iraq, in your estimation?
Peter, there is hope for Iraq and hope for the United States, but I'm really now, after I left the pinball project, domestic tension, I was faced with a post-traumatic stress disorder, and that's what my fear is. What happened when 150,000 soldiers going to come back home? One, we have to be aware of their post-traumatic experience, but also we have to be aware that we never go to another war without knowing the fact. And we should never let any government drive us to dark places. And at the end, we and the rest of the world gonna lose.
Well, thank you so much. My guest has been Wafa Bilal. You can go to his website and see much more of all of this. W-A-F-A-A is the first name, B-I-L-A-L.com. If you missed that, you can either go to City Lights, that's the publisher, citylights.com, or my website where I'll have a link, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. The book is Shoot an Iraqi, Art, Life, and Resistance Under the Sun. Wafa Bilal and Carrie Leiterson are the authors. Thank you so much for being on the Peter Werbe Show.
Thanks a lot, Peter.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit. WRIF.com. Get the latest rock news, concert listings, and where Riff is rocking the streets. Check out Motor City's deals and deals and get stuff for half price. Or hear 101 The Riff online from anywhere in the world.
Website.
Websites worldwide.
101 WRIF and WRIF.